విశ్వపాద పరమహంస పరివ్రాజకాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశతశ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్త సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజ్ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదకి, ఆనందగోడి వైష్ణవ బృందకి, ధర్మాచార్య శ్రీహరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి, ప్రేమ సహు శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి, శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోపగోవినాథ శ్యామగుండ రాధాకుడి గిరి గోవర్ధానికి, బృందావన ధామ్కి, మాయపూర్ ధామ్కి, మధురగిరి ధామ్కి, జగన్నాథపురి ధామ్కి, ద్వారాపురి ధామ్కి, ఎల్లమాయికి, ఎమ్మెమాయికి, తులసిదేవికి, భక్తిదేవికి, సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గో ప్రేమ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ గోల్డ్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ గోల్డ్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ గోల్డ్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ ప్రభుపాద నమః శుభదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూదలేశమిది భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిని నామిని నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణి నమశేష శూన్యవాణి పాశ్వాత్య దేశధారిణి ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరాంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశలాకయ చక్షుర్మీలాంబేన తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః శ్రీచైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపపదామహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంబికం వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతామపదకమలం శ్రీగురుం వైష్ణవంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సాగరనాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సద్వైతం సాధుతం పరిజనం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపదాన్ సహగణలలితాం శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతి భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిని నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవీం గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణే నిశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్యదేశధారిణే నమోం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతి భక్తివేదాంత సరస్వతి నామినే శ్రీవర్షమానవీదేవి కృష్ణ సంబంధ విజ్ఞానందాయినే ప్రభవే నమః మాధుర్యోజ్వల ప్రేమాద్య శ్రీరూపారుగ భక్తిదా శ్రీ గౌరకరుణా శక్తి విగ్రహాయ నమోస్తుతే నమస్తే గౌరవాణి శ్రీవర్తయే దీనధారిణే రూపరూప విరుద్ధావసిద్ధాంతద్వందహారిణే నమో గౌరవిశ్వరాయ సాక్షాద్ వైరాగ్యమూర్తయే విప్రలంబరసాం భోలే పదాంబుజాయ నమః భావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః కృష్ణ ప్రేమ ప్రదాయ కృష్ణాయ కృష్ణ చైతన్య నామ్నే గౌరవిషే నమః పంచదత్వాత్మకం కృష్ణం భక్తరూపస్వరూపకం భక్తావతారం భక్తాఖ్యం నమామి భక్తశాస్త్రియం హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దీనబంధో జగల్పదే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంద నమోస్తుతే హేతం సురలోపాంగో మమ మందమదేర్గదీపః సర్వస్య పదాంబోజౌ రాధామదన మోహనౌ వివృందారణ్యగల్పద్రుమాద శ్రీమన్రత్నాకర సింహాసనస్థౌ రాధాశీల గోవిందదేవో ప్రశాలిభిః సేవ్యమానౌ స్మరామి శ్రీమన్నారసారంభీ వంశీ వటతటస్థితా ప్రశన్నేనస్వరేణ గోపేర్ గోపీనాథా శ్రీయస్తున తప్తకాంచనగౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరీ వృషభానసుదే దేవీ ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే భగవదాం नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रहीतं पुराणमुनिनं मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीं नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दाय तव प्रणेत्रम् येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णप्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीपा प्रपन्नपारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकबाणये न्यायमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दोग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वत्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुम् भीष्मद्रोणतटा जयद्रथजला गान्धारनीलोल्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण महनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमगरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोतीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणादी कैवर्तकेशवा पराशरीवजस्सरोजमलम् विदोर्थगन्धोत्कटम् नानाख्यानकेसरम् हरिकथा सम्बोधनाभोदितम् वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दिभिः ध्यानावस्थितदद्गदेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुस्सुरासुरगणे देवाय तस्मै नमः। Last Sunday, this introduction to the 16th chapter, Devam Asura Sambad Vibhaga Yoga. Earlier, in several chapters, Krishna spoke the Brahma Vidya in different ways. If you look at it, you will see there. In the 7th chapter, Krishna spoke it as Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti. That is how Krishna has introduced the Brahma Vidya. Later on, in the 13th chapter, Krishna spoke Brahma Vidya in a different way. What was that? 13th chapter, Krishna spoke in the Kshetram and Kshetrajna. In the same thing, spoke as Kshetram and Kshetrajna. Earlier it was Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti. In the 14th chapter, in the 14th chapter, Krishna spoke Brahma Vidya in a different way again, in the form of Prakriti and Purusha, isn't it? Prakriti and Purusha. Krishna has spoken the Brahma Vidya. In the 15th chapter, Krishna spoke again Brahma Vidya in a different way, Kshara Purusha, Akshara Purusha. Two different ways, isn't it? So many different ways Krishna has spoken Brahma Vidya to us. Now, from all these different expositions, what in the different chapters, you can understand the truth is not different, whichever way it is spoken. Brahma Vidya is always in relationship with our realization of the truth. But where is the problem then? Problem is, the truth is not complicated. The acceptance inside us is more difficult. That is where we are unable to take it on board. There is a greatest resistance from inside in accepting the truth. Although Krishna keeps explaining to us the simple truth of the Atma, Brahman, still we find that very hard to take it on board because of our own resistance from inside. It is when it came to that, Krishna spoke about this independent chapter, which we talked about before, the introduction, as Krishna says, Devam Asuram. Devigam Asuram. In two different ways, Krishna is again addressing the problem. That why Devika Sambhati necessary to accept, get this truth? Asura Sambhati will not help. That is the main principle in this chapter. But as much as we go through this chapter, you will also understand another thing. Whatever you have perceived as divine and demoniac is all wrong. They are not correct. Because you will understand from Krishna's viewpoint how Krishna puts everyone in the Devigam form or in the Asuric form. And that is quite different than the way we have understood about the Devasura Sambhati Vivagam. That is why this chapter is important. Because of this reason, that many of our misunderstanding or misgivings on the demoniac nature, divine nature, should go from inside. So as we spoke about that last Sunday, as the devotee put it to the people, he said that as far as he is concerned, he said, Arthagama parayuyam, Narayana paravayam, Tasmal sarveshu kaleshu yuyam yuyam vayam vayam. That is his clear statement. Because arthagamam, for acquiring wealth and fame and various desires in this world, that is the business of those who are attached to them, is it not? Those who are what we call as the materialism, is that arthagamam, arthagama parayuyam. They are interested in that. And devotee or one who is looking for realizing the truth, what is his? He is interested in Narayana Paravayam. He is interested in Narayana, in Krishna. He wants to understand Krishna. Before loving Krishna, we have to understand Krishna. If you don't understand somebody, how can you love him? How can you develop bhakti when you don't understand whom we are loving? So, Arthagama Parayuyam, Narayana Paravayam. Because it is like that, he said, Tasmal, therefore, sarveshu kaleshu, all times to come, yuyam yuyam vayam vayam. You will be as you are and we will be as we are. This was the statement we said like that. And so the point is this, for somebody who, for whom money and fulfilling their desires, their success in the material life, vanity, all these things are important for them. They are important for them. For us, Krishna is important. That is the difference. Unless this is all cleared up, this understanding is not going to come. What Krishna is going to talk about in this chapter. Krishna's point is this, that arthagama parayuyam, for them, success in material life, position in this world, fame in this world, followers in this world, and their vanity, all kinds of vanity in them, that kinds, all these fulfillment, they are important for them. For those who are researching for the truth, for self-realization, Krishna is important. They are not important. That's the main thing. So therefore, in all aspects and in all your calculations, all your vyavaharam, that you have your own way of doing things and we have our own way of doing things. Everything is different then. When it is like that, everything is different. Because it is like this, therefore everything changes. They have their own way of doing, making their life, living in this world. They have their own way of keeping their social etiquettes and things like that. That's their business. That's not our business. Our business is, as Krishna is saying here, that unless this separation hasn't happened, so this making that decision, that for me it is more important that Krishna is more important, not the other things. This decision making within oneself is called Diksha. This is called Diksha. Not giving a garland, giving a mala to chant or a name to. This is someone misunderstanding. What does Diksha means? Diksha means this, that a person making a decision within himself, that what this devotee has spoken, Arthagama Parayuyam, Narayana Paravayam, I have nothing to do with you anymore in my life because your way, your goals, your desires and your plans, everything is different than mine. Therefore, you have to go your way, I have to go my way. This decision, if when one has made within oneself, then that is Diksha. That is called Diksha. And otherwise, simply by giving a mala to chant, or a name to a person, or any other change of clothes, all these things won't make diksha. Diksha is this, that from that day when he is taking that diksha, diksha means this decision making, from that day onwards, that Krishna is important, nothing else is important in this life. So, that is why, simply by giving a mantra, it is not a diksha. Suppose so many people are given a mantra, isn't it? But that alone does not make a diksha. Or by any kind of yoga process, it won't make a diksha. Or, just like for the young Brahmana boy, at the age of max, normally by 8 years, they are given this Yajnopavitam, isn't it? What we call as the sacred thread. Yajnopavitam is given to them. What is this Yajnopavita Dharanam? Yajnopavitam. When they put that Yajnopavitam, what it is only at that point he has brought into Brahmanyam. Brahmanyam means this concept inside, Brahman realization. That concept, and that is what is Brahmanyam. And that Brahmanyanam, what Krishna says here, he getting ready for that. And till he gets himself ready for that he makes this decision, his Brahmanyam is what they call it as Gaunam. It's called Gaunam. Because it is this decision that is making that person separate from others. Separate from others. Because you have to look at this way. We are all living entities which we call as Kradumayam. Kradumayam means these words are very, very subtle in one sense. It is not a lecture because we are thinking ourselves that we have to do a lot of things and to change ourselves, isn't it? This is our concept inside us. But actually there is no such thing to be done. No such things to be done. Our body itself has come from the mind, isn't it? If you have listened to our previous classes, we have seen how body is born from the mind. Body is a manifestation of the mind. So, all the limbs of the body is present inside the mind. Is present inside the mind. And the mind was born from some decision what you have made in the past. It has expanded and came in the form of mind. That was made by your intelligence. Inside your prajna, intelligence has made some decision in the past. And that decision, it took a shape and came out in the form of the mind. And from that mind, the body was given birth. Body was given birth. So, you can see there, in your intelligence, if a change happens, everything will change in the mind. And then everything changes in the mind, everything will change in the body as well. This is how it operates in the spiritual life. Spiritual life works in a completely different principle. If your decision in your intelligence, that intelligence you are talking about is not your material intelligence, your prajna, that viveka shakti, what we spoke about before, that viveka shakti, discriminative power within you, if that has made you to decide something different, that decision will change your mind. And when it changes your mind, it will change your body as well. Body also must change. So, everything will change. There's a simple example. Say one person, he was a fruit seller or vegetable merchant. And he knows the market very well. He knows the prices very well, availability and the demand and the customer's requirements, everything he knows well. And he knows that he has got the pulse for the market well and the people. So his business is going on thriving. Suddenly he changed his decision. He changed his decision. Instead of doing the vegetable business, he changed into cloth merchant. He became a cloth merchant. A clothes business. He has changed to clothes business. And because he has made that decision, inside his business, what he was doing. Therefore, along with that, his mind and its capacity will start imagining in that particular way. Because he has made change in the decision inside, his mind will also start reciprocating in a way which is favorable to the decision that he has made with his intelligence. This is how it works, isn't it? So, intelligence or prajna makes the decision. Based on the decision, the mind will start developing it, and it develops in such a way that finally from that mind, the body has been given. So our body, what we have today, has come from so many decisions we have made in the past. It had its effect. And from that, a certain form of mind was developed. And from within that mind, the body was given birth and this particular gross form, what we see today. So, so these little things has its effect on us. Although it may look appears to us that such a decision had this impact on us, which we have not understood so far. That is why we keep on thinking that everything we can change momentarily. Momentarily that change is difficult, because some decision what you have made in the past sometime, either in this life or previous life, had its impact on the mind, formation of that mind. And with that formation of the mind, a particular form of body suitable for fulfilling those desires based on which you have made the decision has manifested here. So that is why Krishna is saying here, in the same way, if your decision is for self-realization, Brahmavidya, on a paramarthic level, absolute platform, if that decision has taken birth inside, then you can't change it again. Then you can't change it again. So afterwards, everything else, like your job, marriage, family, children, this will all change along with that, if you change. If you haven't made that change inside, those changes won't happen. They may take time to change because you have only made the change today. But if you make that change inside, prajna, Krishna says as the prajna, if that prajna changes or the intelligence changes the decision, along with that your mind will change, along with that the body will change. It may not this lifetime, but it may be the next lifetime or the life after. It's very difficult to say that. Because it's an ongoing process for such a long time. Why we have to understand this is that this point Krishna is going to start making in this chapter, it has a long connection with the past life and a long connection with the future life. It is so much related to many lifetimes before this appearance and many lifetimes after this appearance. The impact of this chapter, you will notice that it goes ways back to many lifetimes and ways goes back to many lifetimes after from now. So, but this firm decision, that absolute level, that in this lifetime itself I want to realize the truth, that is the most important decision to make. The Brahma Vidya itself is not difficult. It's not much to know about it. As Krishna said in the second chapter, a few verses. That's all we have to know that. The absolute nature of the soul. But what's more difficult is that Vyavasayalpiya Buddhi. Remember that in the second chapter. When Krishna, that is the difficult part of it. It's not the knowledge is very difficult. The knowledge of the self is not difficult. It is that decision making within ourselves, that is the most difficult thing that hasn't happened. Bahushaga anandascha buddhayo avyavasayinam, Krishna says, isn't it? Yeah. So you can see, bahushaga anandascha. We are all sitting here with bahushaga anandascha. That is why these complications has come. So that decision making is not from this world, that they call it as adhyavasayam. In the Shastram they call it as adhyavasayam. It's a decision which you can't make within this world, in our present world. You have to make that decision outside this world. What that means is that keeping all our present world with us, you can't make that decision. That decision you have to make outside this world. Isn't it? Bhagushakhanandas cha buddhayo avyavasayinam. And that is the difficult part. The knowledge is not so complicated. You can see in the different ways how the acharyas and the great rishis and sages, how they have given it to us. It's quite simple way they have presented it to us. But it's not because of the difficulty in the knowledge that it is not happening to us. The reason why it's not happening to us is this shortage of this decision inside. It's not happening. That's why. Important thing there. So, that conviction or that determination or that resolution inside or that decision inside, if that has happened inside, then his life, the basic material has changed in their life, in that person's life. The very basic material has changed. And that means in each and every cell in his body, this decision will penetrate into that. It will penetrate into that. So, for some more time, he will remain like the old person for a short period of time. But little by little, you can see that all his life will change. Whole life will change. Even in his vyavaharam also. Vyavaharam means his transactions, dealings with the world and everything. It will start pulling him out from there. It will start pulling him back. So, such a person who has made that decision, that person is the one who is ready to hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedantam. He is the one who is qualified. We talked about Adhikarityam, you remember? Adhikari means one who is qualified. He is the person who is qualified to hear. Who is qualified to hear. And what is the topic? We talked about Adhikarityam, Vishayam and Sambandham, Prayojanam. Four things, remember? So, Vishayam is Brahmavidya, Paramarthavidya or Brahmavidya. And Sambandham, what is the Sambandham? Sambandham is this, Abheda Sambandham. Abheda Sambandham means, what is that Abheda Sambandham? Sambandham means, we are going to know about ourselves, not about somebody else, about ourselves, isn't it? And what is the benefit? Prayojanam. Prayojanam is this, ignorance is gone from inside. Not knowing us is our main problem. That's our ajnanam, isn't it? Not knowing us. We know everything else except us. That's our present state. We don't know who we are, but we know everybody, everything else in this world. So much we know, but we don't know about ourselves. So, prayojanam is that ajnana nivrti. Ajnanam goes away from inside. And with the removal of that ajnanam or ignorance from inside, absolute happiness comes, shanti comes, anandam comes, and that final state of that there is no such thing called death, that also comes along with that. So, it is a very rare decision. This decision what Krishna is talking about. And the happiness that comes from that is unlimited. And this anandam, you cannot get through sadhana, not through the mind, not by your actions from kriya. You cannot create this. This anandam has unlimited. And that is why Acharya Swami mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita commentary. It's called Ativelam. Ativelam means it doesn't have any boundaries. It doesn't have any boundaries. Such a happiness, such a bliss. Then Vachya has no boundaries. In other words, it has no interruptions. Anandam, what they call it is Vichiti. Vichiti means broken. It's not broken. And realization. It is spoken so much in the Shastram. The reason for that is that such a natural thing, what is present in all of us, not knowing that there is a thing like that inside us, which is by very nature is Satya Chitta and Anandam. And even though it is present there, we have thrown away that and accepted a life in this world completely in relationship with the matter on a mundane level and being feeling happy with this state where we are today, isn't it? If you look at the Upanishads, in Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Prabhupada quotes this verse in one of the verses somewhere in Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. Upanishad says, Shrunvanta Vishwa Amrutasya Putraha. Shrunvanta Vishwa Amrutasya Putraha. Your children of immortality, Upanishad is saying to us, Aryadhamani Divyani Tastu Vedam Ayenam Purusham Mahandam Aditya Varnam Tamasa Parastat. Shedashadra Upanishad is saying to us that Shrunundu Vishwe Amardasya Putraham, that let everybody here in this world, it says, Shrunundu Vishwe Amardasya Putraham. Why? All of us are children of immortality. There is no such thing called a death in us. We are whole life fearing about this death, is it not? All the time frightened about the death, when it's going to come. All this feeling. But Upanishad is saying that by nature, our nature is immortal. Ananda Swarupi, isn't it? So Upanishad is saying, not only you, even those who are in the heavenly planets, let them also hear. Ayamani Divyani Dastuhu. Who is saying this? Rishi, who has acquired the knowledge of the self, who has realized the self. Vedaham evam purusham mahandam. And he says there, I understand the Purusha who is inside us, Andaryami, who is inside, I know him. Aditya Varnam. And he is there like the sun, he is shining inside. Suvarna Jyotihi ya evam Vedaha. So you can enjoy knowing this, Rishi is saying to us. But you will also get this truth if you are looking for it. But we are not looking for it. That's the Rishi's complaint. Come, Rishis are saying to us. So, Rishi's interest is this, that they have got it and they want to give it to everybody else. Everybody else, they want us to give it to them. But they know also the problem that it is not possible to give it to everybody. The Rishis knows that. They want to give it to everybody, but they are saying that they know that it is not possible. So, like all the self-realized souls, they are thinking that everybody should realize the self. Because they know that not realizing the self is the whole problem that we are suffering here. When they realize the truth, and when they see us suffering with our body, mind and jnanam inside more than anything else, they want us to realize the truth and come to that state where they are experiencing there. So, but they also know the problem that only those who want it will have it. Only those who want it will have it. So, if they say that they want to give it to everybody, if they come out to want to give it to everybody, what will happen? We will put him on the cross. That's what we will do, isn't it? So, in some way, that is always been the history was like that. When they come out to tell us and to give it to us, the world will not let them go freely like that. We will put them on the cross in different ways. In other countries, they put Jesus on the cross for speaking the truth, is it not? But in India, it happens in a different way. What they will do is, they will worship you to such an extent and make you an incarnation. That's what in India they do. All other places, they'll put you on the cross or shoot you down or do something to you. In India, what they do is, they put you in such a pedestal, high pedestal, and start worshipping you, and they will make you crazy at the end. Even if you have some sanity in there, that sanity will go. They'll make sure that you go crazy at the end. So, and this is very well known thing. These things are happening all the time. It always happens. It's not unknown thing. So, their attitude is that you stay where you are. We will stay where you are. We will worship you. And you keep on doing this year after year after year. That person also eventually will come out of it. Isn't it? There's a book, Mountain Path, you can read it. There's stories about all these things, what happens. Then the Satan, how he works in these things. So his job is to take everyone into the demoniac side, isn't it? That's his business. Satan's business is that. So this chapter, this Devasura Sambad Vibhaga Yoga, divine and demoniac nature, so will explain to you how this Satan is working in all of us. Nobody is outside this. Everybody has a Satan inside working him. So what he does is, if somebody is going to hear Bhagavad Gita what this Satan does is you'll say to him, look, there's a nice program in the television today. Bhagavad Gita you can hear some other time. Watch it, don't miss this program, it's such an important, like that. So you can go for Bhagavad Gita next week. What's harm? This one class, if it's on the web anyway, you can listen later. This is all Satan's business, to tell you like that, isn't it? So, therefore, otherwise something else. A guest whom you have never seen for 30 years, he will pop in at that time. I've come to visit you. I come from after a long time I'm seeing you. He'll say, come and tell you this. So you will say, yes, what to do now? Yes, come. So he has come after a long time. And if you go for Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam, he will feel offended. Is that more important? I have come to see you after 30 years. And is that more important for you? They'll put it to you like this, isn't it? So that is his job. That is his job. The Satan's job is all these things. So in the earthly planet or in this Mother Earth, if one person gets self-realized, and that is the greatest celebration, because the whole material nature gets pleased with that when he realizes the truth, because at least one has escaped from this prison. Because he's going and touching that super soul inside Antaratma, and he will do the greatest benefit to the whole society, his presence in this world. There's no need for, if a person is present like that, no need for any other kind of charitable activities, social services, things like that. That's all secondary compared to his very presence in this world. What he can do to this world, nobody else can do. Nobody else can do. So, a person who has realized the self, or the jnani who has realized the truth, from him the greatest welfare for this world. And otherwise, if you try to do good things in this world, nobody can do everything perfectly, even good things. Because behind every good thing, there is some bad thing also. It will always be mixed. And you will understand that after a while. Any good thing you try to do here, you will see that it is combined with something bad. Some results when it comes, anything, whatever you look, whether it is preaching Krishna consciousness, from that onwards, anything what you do here, everything is tainted with something bad. In the results, if you look, you will see some results are bad results coming from that. So that is just like an after effect of the good thing what you are trying to do. As an after effect, it will come out like that. Big people, if you take, you can see it has happened. Is it not? And a great saint like Mahatma Gandhi, he tried to do good things. So many good things he tried to do. He lived himself to that. But in 1948, when the partition happened, see the after effect, Gandhiji himself felt very bad about it, isn't it? Millions of people were unnecessarily slaughtered, all in the name of politics and in the name of breaking up the country, and all kinds of things happened. So you can see, even great saintly people found that the after effect was always will be mixed with something will happen. That's the way the material nature is. Even Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada tried to preach Krishna consciousness. There were so many calamities also as a part of that has happened, which we know. Who have looked at it, you understand that. There were a lot of difficulties, a lot of people had to go through. And a lot of after effects. It's not everything was rosy. There is something, bad things happen in the process of presenting Krishna consciousness even to this world. So what it is teaching us is, you can't do only good in this world. This is important, because when you study this chapter, this background knowledge is important. Otherwise you will know, our nature is always to break up into two. One list good and one list bad. And that's how most of the people have understood this chapter. They become divine nature, demonic nature. I am divine, rest everybody is demoniac. Black and white business. This is not black and white. That's the problem. This is the difficulty here. This chapter is not black and white. When you go through this chapter, you will understand why it's not black and white. That is how Puranam is complicated, because of this difficulty. Because it's not black and white, that is why when you read Puranam, you are getting confused. about it. So that's why this chapter, Krishna is saying here, that so only thing is, if you have jumped out of this divine and demonic nature, then you are from the modes of nature, then you are in an absolute platform. Only in the absolute platform you can be perfect. Otherwise, everything what you do, good in this bad, there is always something bad associated with that. Suppose you are doing everything bad, you will also find sometimes some good coming out of it. It's also the other way it works. This good and bad is something what you will notice, they always go together. Even sometimes, you will observe this sometimes, some people, they are addicted to doing a lot of bad things, but suddenly they go do something good. And you start getting shocked. How did he do that? That he has done something good. So why is that it happens in this way? Because that is the nature of this prakriti. Prakriti's nature is like that. So it is in that book you will read this story also. The Satan family. There was a big Satan and there was a boy Satan, a young lad who is coming up, going to become a big Satan later. So one day the big Satan was sitting quietly, was not doing anything. The little one comes up to him and says to him, "Why are you sitting quiet like this? You're not doing your job." The little one says to the grown-up one, the big one. So the big one told him, "You don't understand," he said. He said, "Look at that tree. There's a big tree there. There's somebody sitting there. And he's talking about God. And there's a lot of people sitting and listening to him," he said to him. "So imagine this," he said. "Suppose what he's talking about, and they all got everything what he has said, what will happen to us then? Our job is finished then, isn't it?" This is what he's saying. "So our job is over. So what I have done is," he says, "that because our business also has to continue, therefore I have to do something. And a lot of people are going there to listen to him." So the big Satan is saying this to the little one. He said, "You only start coming to this field now," he's saying to the little one. "You sit there and watch me, how I am doing it," he said. "How I am doing it. Just observe me, how I do this," he said. "I've been working for a very long time in this field," he said. "And I know what I have to do," he said. "Look at this number of people who are going there," he said. And the big Satan says to the little one, "So, the lot of people who are sitting and they are very carefully listening to everything what he says. Who are they?" the little one asked. He says, "They are all his disciples." "They are all his disciples." He says, the big Satan says, "Actually no," he says. "They are people whom I have arranged to go and sit there. Their job is that whatever he says, they have to show that they are very loyal to him, but their main job is to completely interpret it in a different way and present it to the world." This is their job. This is their job. So therefore you don't have to get frightened about it. I'm just keeping an eye, is all happening properly or not. Only thing their business is that they'll make sure that the message doesn't go to the world by their own interpretations and their own their own vyakhyanam. Vyakhyanam means they give you their own version. They'll present it to the world. And there will be thousands of fools after them to go. And that's what you find in the spiritual world. Always this happens. You will think, organized. People are affected by organization too much. They think, organization? It should be right because it's an organization. It's not right in spiritual life. Everywhere else it may be right, but not in spiritual life. Completely they can change everything to such an extent, take you away from the truth. And that is why the big Satan says, "I've kept them there for this purpose, that they have to do this job." Completely interpret everything in a different way to suit their purpose. And this is therefore he says here that nothing will go through properly, and it is the most difficult thing to get that nishtha. Nishtha means that jnana nishtha. Jnana nishtha means that to get established in the truth. It is not easy. It is not easy. And the important thing in order to that happen is to hear properly. Not like the way the Satan's disciples, how they have done it. They may not heard it properly or got it in the wrong way, misunderstood everything and presented it in the wrong way to others as well. So this is why Shravanam is given the highest importance. You see that? Why Shravanam is the most important thing? Because that Shravanam, if it is done properly, Shravanam means that listening or hearing or whatever in English you say, but Shravanam is the word. That Shravanam is the key thing in getting the message correct. That Shravanam is the key thing. And that is the reason why Srimad Bhagavatam is always saying Shravanam, Shravanam, Shravanam. It keeps repeating that, isn't it? So, hearing. What is the benefit of hearing? Hearing is that itself is the benefit, properly hearing. Because what we are hearing about is extremely rare thing, isn't it, about Krishna. Extremely unusual thing, that's what we are hearing about. Because we are hearing about ourselves. That's the biggest thing. We are hearing about ourselves. Normally we don't hear about ourselves. We hear about everything else. What's important here is that you are only going to start hearing now only about yourself, who you are, is it not? So because of that, you don't have to get anything for this, to hear about yourself. And because it's about yourself, you never gave attention to it before. Never gave attention to it. And here, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to become anything. All these things doesn't exist. All it is to hear about yourself, who you are. That's main thing. That is the main thing. So what's already existing inside us, about us, that is being presented so that you know who you are. This is the purpose of all the Salsangam. Therefore, this is the reason why Salsangam is given importance to other things. Because in Salsangam only, you are discussing about yourself. Everywhere else, you discuss about something else outside you. Not about you. Something outside you. Even including your body, or including your mind, or including your activities in this world, but not about you anytime. Isn't it? So people ask this question. Parikshit is going to die in 7 days' time. And what is the benefit of talking Srimad Bhagavatam to him? This question came up, isn't it? So that's a person normally will ask that question. A person, someone is going to die, and for 7 days he has to sit and listen. What is the benefit from that? So instead we should ask Parikshit to do something about it. Just like we do everything else in this world, isn't it? You didn't say anything to him to do. Instead, for 7 days lifespan he had, and that 7 days you have told him to sit and listen. Didn't say anything to him. You could have told him pranayama or any other kind of yoga sadhana, something like that, to do something. Instead, we didn't ask him to do that. Instead, they asked him to sit and listen, isn't it? So, 7 days, Shuka Brahmarshi spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to him. But what happened at the end of 7 days? Parikshit is saying, Siddho Asmi, Anugrihito Asmi. Remember, in the 12th canto, he says, Siddho Asmi, Anugrihito Asmi. He says, I got it, I am satisfied. Just by hearing, he is saying this, isn't it? So, this Shravanam, hearing, is in a natural way, Ajnana Niravakaranam Matram Brahmani Karyam Natu Brahma Jnane Yatnaha. In the Bhagavad Gita Bhashyam it says, Ajnana Niravakaranam, what is happening is that this deep down ignorance in us, Ajnanam Niravakaranam, wiping it out from inside, Matram Brahmani Karyam. Once it is wiped out from inside, Natu Brahma Jnane Yatnaha. You don't have to work separately for knowledge of yourself. That's already there. At the moment, we are not able to experience who we are. We are experiencing as the body, experiencing as the mind, or something else like that. But not experiencing the self, who we are, isn't it? So only removing the ajnanam, avidya inside, and then you will know what we are. It doesn't have to be separately spoken. There is no, absolutely nothing shortage here. And when we feel that I'm missing something, I need something, this is due to the ajnanam inside. That ajnanam must go, avidya must go, and it is only removing that ignorance from inside, that's all what is required. Because we know everything else in this world, about the world, isn't it? So, and only thing we are not sure in this world is about ourselves. Have you noticed that? You are sure about so many other things, but you are not sure about yourself. What will happen? Everything else is known to us, isn't it? So, that desire inside, tendency to know about the things outside in this world, and that jijnyasa, and jijnyasa or chigirsha is there, trishna, desire is there. But when the attention desire has developed inside or jijnyasa has developed inside to turn inside towards us, then we become qualified to hear Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise not. And it is at that time when your attention start going inwards, it is at that time Shastram is asking this question, who are you? Who are you? And do you know about yourself? And you want to know so many things, but you don't know who you are. And this answer comes. And you are inquiring about God. And who is this person inquiring about God? Isn't it? And you are saying that I am in bondage, or I am in distress, I am in material existence. We see all these things, isn't it? In our own mind, we make up all these understanding. I am in distress, I am in bondage, I am in material existence, I have got ajnanam inside, avidya inside. Who is saying all these things? That I've got all these things, isn't it? That I don't know. Who is saying that? So, once you know that, who is speaking all these things, who is experiencing all these things, or who's thinking all these things, that then, once you know that, the answer is very simple. That knowledge, what is required for that, Vedantam is that. Vedantam is meant for that. So all the material knowledge is a burden for us. All the material knowledge is a burden at the end. Because it will come, it will go. It won't stay, put it. Because even if you have come to know about it, all the material knowledge what you have got in this world, there is not much of a use at the end. Once you retire, you are 90% gone. Then what, with the remaining 10%, you are just floating in this world. Most of the knowledge what you have acquired for the job or work in this world. So, or for knowing that who is the president or who is the prime minister, or whether the earth planet is round or it is flat, all this knowledge, or how many stars are in the galaxy, how will it help me by knowing that? Or a new planet has appeared in the sky. How will it help me by knowing that, isn't it? Absolutely useless. All these things are useless. Or even knowing about Vaikuntham Kailasam also, not much of a benefit, knowing that. Because, or even if you know that there is heavenly planets, knowing about that, the facilities in the heavenly planets, what benefit? So, Vedam is saying to us, there are so many mantras in the Vedam. Vedic mantras, isn't it? Different kinds of mantra for different purposes also. Or to perform sacrifices, yagam, yajnam and all that thing. And even if you have got to know all of them, still you remain separate and they remain separate. This is the important thing. Try to see this logic in that. Even if you have got all the knowledge of everything in this creation, for everything you have got it, science, technology, or any other thing, ultimately you are separate, that knowledge is separate. What does that mean? That means one day, by nature's arrangement, the knowledge will be taken away from you. Not matter how big that knowledge is. How big that knowledge is. Whatever it may be. Whether it is planets, whether it is about earth planet, or whether it's anything related to this body, mind, intelligence, whatever it may be. Any knowledge in this world, science, medicine, engineering, technology, whatever it may be,
all the knowledge is separate from you. It's not connected with you. They come and they will go. But what is the difference then? Brahma Vidya is that knowledge which you cannot go from you. Once it's come, it's there. It's already there. All it is that ajnanam that is covering that knowledge is taken out and then you are in your state, what it is spoken here. So, this Vidya, Krishna is going to talk about here, Atma Vidya or Brahma Vidya, it cannot live separately from you. That's what you are. That's Brahma Vidya is what it is, isn't it? So, that is why Upanishad is saying there. You see how rishis have thought about it so depth that they were able to see this classic difference. And it is such a big difference. It is, isn't it? You see, you work whole life. You got so much degrees and qualifications in this world. At the time of death, you can just put it in the bin, all that. Whole life is a waste at the end, is it not? All of us know that. Whether, whomever you may be, however qualification you may be, you have gotten in this world, at the last minute, when you leave the body, just like the body goes to the cemetery or for burning, your qualifications will go into the skip. Who cares then after that about it? Yes, you know. But that is why rishis gave importance to Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya, you can't lose it. That is why it says like this. Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidya, Pratishtham. All other Vidya cannot match with Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidya, Pratishtham. Everything is dependent on Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya is the only thing that will go with you. Because that's yours. That's what you are. That's what Krishna is pointing out in these verses. So, that is why Upanishad says, Satyam, Jnanam, Anandam, Brahmam. Satya, Jnanam, Anandam, Brahmam. Yoveda Nihidam Guhayam. And that knowledge is inside, in the heart. Nihidam Guhayam, Parame Vyomam. Soshnude, Sarvan Kaman Saha. Taittiriya Upanishad says like this. That once you know your own Swarupam, or my own identity, who I am. That is this business, isn't it? Self-realization means knowing who I am. If it is known that, then complete satisfaction after that. Whereas material knowledge, you can see people, they have studied whole life, got so many qualifications, still they feeling there is something missing. They're going to research into something else. And sometimes people die in that research process. They leave the body and go from here. And many times this realization comes very, very late, but then it's too late. But here is one knowledge, Brahma Vidya, where research is not important. There is no research here. Something that's already there, and Upanishad is showing to us that goal to us. That's what Upanishad does. And because everybody wants anandam, happiness, isn't it? When Upanishad says anandam, immediately we feel enthusiastic about it. That we are thinking that if I watch a movie or if I go for a football match or a dance or a musical concert, I'll see that I may get some anandam from there, some happiness from that, isn't it? So, but we know that after that event is over, it's finished, gone. It lasts for an hour, 2 hours, whatever it is. And that is why it's called Marumarichika. Marumarichika means that mirage. It is a mirage. And when you look at from a long distance, there is water. But when you go close to it, there is no water. There is no water there, isn't it? So that is why Upanishad is saying that this anandam, happiness, what you are looking for, is actually you are the happiness. Tvam asi. Tvam asi. That tvam asi vakyam. Tvam asi is pointing out to that. That anandam or happiness, what you are looking for, is inside you, nowhere else. That's where that is your swarupam, your identity is like that. So, but because you don't know that, in ignorance, you are searching in so many other places. So, and you are hearing this, that tatomasi mahavakyam, and in solitude you are sitting and you are analyzing it, that you know in the last chapter Krishna spoke that Shahiram, body, is not me. That is Kharam. Kharam. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken. Kharam and Akharam. Isn't it? And Purushottama. Three things Krishna spoke in the last chapter. So, from Kshara Purusha Akshara Purusha, Purushottama. Three things Krishna spoke in the last chapter. So before entering into this 16th chapter, it's necessary to see that link from that last chapter and to this chapter. So our real identity is not like the way we are thinking about us today. That's the first thing. Our identity today, because we got so used to this body and so used to the name, Namam Rupam, anybody when they ask, we can only think about ourselves in the form what we are today. We can't think anything different than that, isn't it? Because in this understanding, we are a little tiny jiva. And that also we don't know. Actually, what we know is, we are a gross body. That's what we know about ourselves. To say that, you are not that, that's why Salsangam, we have to keep repeating this. So, not this limited body, nor male, nor female. None of them is our identity, isn't it? And neither I am that person who is experiencing happiness and distress like a tiny creature in this world. Then who am I and what is my identity? This question has to vibrate inside. And actually all what we are experiencing is the self. At the moment what we are experiencing is the self, that awareness inside. But although it may all look very theoretical to us at the moment, but in reality, everyone is experiencing the self and everyone is selfish. Everyone is, because he is experiencing the self, that is why he is selfish. What are we experiencing? Our awareness, is not our existence. And that is about the self, and that is why we are selfish. You can't change this by saying, or we say to the world, or everybody, we should not be selfish, we should not be selfish. It's not possible. How could it be? We will be like this. This is how we are created, with that selfishness in us. That is in return, that is ingrained in us. It cannot be taken out from there. So, if you are not experiencing yourself, Acharya Swami mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, you will never be selfish. Because the self is above everything else for us. Is it not? Ultimately for the self, we are doing everything in this world. And it is for the sake of the self. So, our center itself is the center of selfishness. Center of selfishness. Yadi almanubodhihi tasya sarvaha swartha vyarthartham nasahejad. So, if you are not experiencing the self, then our selfishness won't be there. Suppose you are not feeling about your own existence, your own awareness, and you are not thinking about yourself at all, that Atma exists inside, and you are not conscious of the presence of Atma. You are just like a body, another body. You won't be thinking very much in terms of your own interests. Your own interests. So, you can observe this often with people, that even in the plane of the body, there will be some selfishness. Some selfishness. So, but this force inside about this self is very, very strong, that you can't overcome. That force that's coming from the self, awareness, it's a very powerful thing. So, if you observe people, you will notice this. It is difficult to take it away from others, this force, to, from anyone for that matter. suppose there is a prasadam is distributed in the ashram or in the temple. Prasadam distribution is going on. And there is a lot of people standing in a queue for the prasadam. So, some in the middle, one person came and he said that he crept into the queue. He didn't stay in the queue. He came into the front. So, somebody will say in the queue, oh, look at him, what he has done. Isn't it? So, he's saying, but this person who commented about him, who has got into the queue, he thinks that, oh, I'm not selfish like him. He's very selfish, that's why he's got into the queue. He says like that. And he's thinking that, let me wait, let everybody finish. And he thinks that I am not so selfish like others. That is why I was willing to wait that long, isn't it? So, and people, others will think, oh, he's definitely a Mahatma who doesn't broke the queue, rather he stayed in the queue. But it is difficult to say that he is free from selfishness. He is free from selfishness. Because this force inside, in that person, that force of selfishness is something which you cannot resist in anyone, which you cannot resist in anyone. So, knowing this, that where this selfishness is coming from is important in spiritual life. Don't look at it from the social side. That's what we most of the time do. We think, oh, if I break into the queue, I'm not saying that you should always break into the queue. That's not what it means. That is a social need, social obligations. Yeah. But to think that, based on that, to judge yourself is wrong. That's the point. Because this selfishness is coming from the self. Looking at yourself and protecting, of course we don't know how to protect that, how to look after that. That's another side. That is ajnanam, avidya that is. But the need of the self to realize the truth, to escape from this misery, from material life, and to come to that platform of happiness of the self is ingrained in everyone. That will never go. That can never go. It cannot go because that is what it wants. It wants to realize the truth. Anandam, anubhuti, happiness. It wants to experience that. Because that's our birthright, as Shastram says. It's our birthright to experience that happiness inside of the self. So that is why he mentions here that this force that is coming from that self, that cannot be suppressed. You cannot suppress that. It will come out some form in some way. But sometimes, when it comes to the bodily level, it is then that we do all this, queue jumping and all that. Jumping the queue and all that. When it comes to the bodily level, we do that. Or, in a mental level, you may try to push down somebody else or control others. On a mental level, you may do all that. But when that understanding that really the self is looking for anandam, bliss, happiness from inside. Bliss or happiness from inside, then you can understand that that's a force which will never go. It will remain always. And all spiritually advanced and realized people, they have that very strong in them. That won't go away. That is their success. And that's their strength. That's their strength. So, Upanishad says this. It's not in someone's statement. It's not a statement from anybody else. It's coming from the Upanishads. So, you can notice there, knowing the proper form of that power, what is operating inside, and how that power is influencing us in our life, and it is that same power that is going to liberate us also from this state. It is that power which is coming from the self, awareness. It is that very same power which is going to finally take us out of this material life, material existence, from this existence. So that is what it's saying. My own love for myself. Atmanastu kamaya bhavati. Mṛdāraṇyam says, between Yajñavalkya and Maitreyi, Yajñavalkya says, Atmanastu kamaya bhavati. All my desires in this world, only for one purpose, for my own benefit. My own benefit. It is for me I am doing all these things, not for anybody else. That is the important principle. So whatever you may call it, premam, love, or priyam, attachment, ultimately that priyam is for towards me, not anybody else. It is not possible to have priyam to anybody else. That is the truth. But in its perverted form, we think that we have attachment to husband, wife, children, family members, society. All false. They're all false. You love yourself first. And that is the only truth in this whole thing. That you love yourself. Attachment is for you. You want to be happy. That is why you are doing all other things. Thinking that that will all make you happy, but finally it's all frustration and disappointment will come from that. Why? Because the center where your attachment was necessary, you didn't show attachment. That center is Atma, the soul. That is where attention should have been. Instead, that attention you have distributed on so many other things in this world. And therefore, finally, disappointment comes from that. This is the Upanishad's most secret, highest secret. Upanishad's telling us that. Till we get it and till we keep that in our consciousness, we are supposed to always feel that misery coming from that. So, you can see this priyam, love for some things like that. I attached my land of birth, for example. Why? Because I was born there. This body came from there. That's all. Nothing more than that, isn't it? So, I'm attached to my religion. Why is that? Because I was born into that religion. Therefore. Similarly, you can see all these things is centered around that aham, awareness inside. That is the center. Whether it's religion, land of birth, the language, whatever it may be, anything you take, it's all connected. A dotted line connection is going there to that center aham, awareness, isn't it? Because if you take away this aham from inside, awareness inside, none of these things can exist on its own, is it not? Aham is important. Suppose I say I was born in some particular place and I'm attached to that place. That identification is only possible because I have this identity inside as aham, I am. If I am is not there, that land of birth has no meaning. If I am is not there, the language I speak has no meaning. If I am not there, then everything else has no meaning. It is that I am that makes it all meaningful. Is it not? So, the same thing Krishna is saying here, that attachment to your land of birth, attachment to your language, or attachment to your religion, anything if you take, which are close to, dear to everybody, even those things cannot exist if this awareness, aham, aham, aham inside is not strong. Based on the strength of this, all other things survive. Otherwise, they have no existence. So, that knowing that center, that is that aham, is who am I? Is who am I? Because it is that Atma nama kasyajit prasiddha. In the name of Atma, in the Jnana Margam you will say knowing Atma. In the Bhakti Margam you will say knowing Krishna. Bhagavan. That's all. So, Atma is not unknown to us. Atma is not unknown to us, and everyone is operating in this world with this Atma behind. Atma behind that. And everyone is perfect in the platform of the soul, and that happiness that is coming from there, and that is our identity. That is why Upanishad keep repeating this to us. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. And Upanishad says this and we can't accept it. Why? Because of the Ajnanam inside. This is the difficulty. Upanishad is so firm and clear on this. You are eternal, you are pure, you are fully conscious, you are always liberated. Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. Isn't it? So, that is why, and Upanishad says also, you don't have any defects because of the Upadhi. Upadhi means the mind, body, intelligence. Because none of them can cause any black mark or black spot on you, on yourself, on the self, on aham, awareness. Isn't it? So, this Maya, which Krishna is talking about, which also belongs to Krishna, Krishna's Maya. Maya has opened up this drama, isn't it?
And she had sent us here with different dress. Put on us some dress and sent us here. Isn't it? And it does not allow us to understand who we are. That is Maya's job. That's what Maya is doing to us. Not allowing us to understand who we are, she put us some dress on us and sent us here. And that's all. So that is why you can see sometimes that it does not allow you to understand who you are. This is Maya's success. The greatest success of Maya is this, that she has very successfully kept us, not allowing us to realize who we are. You can see yourself, every one of us, is it not, going through that. So, just like you can see in a drama is going on, a person by name Ramachandra, he had to act the role of Ravana. Just happens sometimes, isn't it? His name is Ramachandra. He had to act like Ravana in the drama. But after the drama is over, he's still like Ramachandra again. But he's neither Ramachandra nor Ravana, is it not? So in the same way, so it so happened that he got sick afterwards, after the drama is over. And they told him, Ramachandra has worked as Ravana for a while in the drama. And after the drama was over, everybody told him, take your clothes off now, Ravana's clothes. Put back your old Ramachandra's clothes. So, sometimes you can see, when you identify with a particular actor's role, you will identify with it so strongly, is it not? Because of practicing it and going and working in the stage for that in that way. So, it is at that time that somebody comes and tells you that remove that clothes and come back to your normal self. So, most of us are, our drama is not over. The drama is going on here and we are continuing with that drama. And drama is going to come to an end. It's not going to be like this forever. But one day, this role, what we have taken here now, we have to remove these clothes and throw it away. And because this is not our real identity, what we are now here. That is the first thing to know, that we are not what we are here now in this body, isn't it? Then that is why, who am I? That question becomes very relevant, isn't it? Who am I? Am I this body? Am I this mind? Am I this intelligence? And when I realize that none of this is anything to do with me, and my pure identity is eternal, pure, like the sky, so pure that, and I have no upadhi. Upadhi means neither body, mind, intelligence, these kind of things. None of them exist in me. My real identity, as Upanishad is saying, is Ananda Swarupam, Sat, Chit, Anandam. This is my real identity. I have to be that, Sat, Chit, Anandam. And this is why, to get this into our head, that is the purpose of Bhagavad Gita, to this realization into us. That unfortunately it is not so easy, isn't it? We won't accept. That is the problem. Although Upanishad is saying that that's all you have to know, nothing more than that. And it is the same goal of all the Upanishads, Vedam, everything. So, once you reach there, that state, actually not for reaching, that's what it is, that what happens is that avaranam, remember that word, avaranam, coverage. Once that coverage is gone, then life becomes meaningful. Then you feel some meaning to this life. And you also feel some perfection within you. At the moment we are not feeling any perfection in us, isn't it? Always feeling something missing in life or some imperfections, so many kinds of imperfections. And those imperfections will only go when this realization comes, who we are, who we are. That is the benefit. That benefit in Krishna mentions this in the 15th chapter, if you remember. Krishna spoke about that in detail in the last chapter. That's why it's called Shastram. Remember, Krishna at the end, in the last verse, Idam Guhyatamam Shastram, he called it.
That particular chapter, Krishna called it as Shastram. You remember that? Idam Guhyatamam Shastram, he says. Why is it called Shastram? Because for this reason, it is a confidential thing, that realization of that chapter. It's a very confidential thing. Because once you have realized that chapter, that means that you have realized the Vedam. Vedic knowledge is completely realized. That is the reason that you can see that while taking prasadam, they chant that chapter, 15th chapter. Important. All the great, great ashrams, mathams, and they are very cultured people who practice spiritual life very seriously, who are studying shastram seriously, they will chant that 15th chapter, particularly this 15th chapter, because that is the shastram. Whole thing summarized into one chapter. And you have mentioned, where Krishna mentioned, Aham Vaishwanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashrita Pranamana Samayipto Pachamyanam Chakravidham, isn't it? So there it covered the whole body, and body, the mind, and our surupam, our identity, all those things is covered in that chapter. Have you noticed that? Aham Vaishwanara Bhutva, talking about the body, Krishna said, I am a part of that, Vaishwanara. Then Krishna also mentioned about the aham inside. Sarvasya jaham kriti sannivishtaha. Matras Madhritnyanam Abohanamcha Vedesya Sarve Rahameva Vedya Vedandagan Veda Videva Chaham. That verse. So body level, in the spiritual level, in mental level, intellectual level, everything, Krishna has spoken and told us what our Swarupam is finally. Is it not? That Akshara Purusha stage, and finally Krishna said Purushottama level of realization.
Mm-hmm.
So everything what has been spoken through the Shastram, Krishna has brought in that chapter. Through the bodily level, Krishna brought us in first. Brought us to the mental level, intellectual level, and finally to the spiritual level, and shown to us that ultimately that is the only truth in all these things. Not in the bodily level, mental level. So in all levels, it convinced us that to know our Swarupam, and therefore it is a Jnana Shastram. Jnana Shastram it is. So while living in this body, realizing the self is called Vedam. That is what Vedam is literature is created for. While living in this body, you have to realize the self, isn't it? And that is what was spoken in a systematic way in that 15th chapter, in the last chapter. So this samagra means in a overall way, this knowledge is saying to us that Jiva in particularly is not separate from Ishvara, separated from Ishvara. Because Jiva and Ishvara, where is the difference? It's only in the dress. It's only in the dress, the difference between Jiva and Ishvara. Vastu is the same. Vastu is the same. It is the same Atma who is dressed up as Jiva and who is dressed up as Ishvara. If you look into the Bhagavatam, in the very end, in the 13th chapter of the 12th canto, you will see that there is no difference Ishvara and Jiva. Practically, it's one and the same. But due to certain conditions attached to Jiva, you feel that you are separate from Ishvara. Separate from Ishvara. So, Vastu is the same. So, that is also spoken in that 15th chapter. When Akshara Purusha becomes Purushottama, that is where it is. Kshara Purusha's nature we have understood. Ahangaram, false ego, and identification with the body and the mind. All this is the nature of the Jiva's nature. Jiva's nature. But when we realize Akshara Purusha, you start seeing that Jiva, if the Ajnanam is removed from him, he is Akshara Purusha. He is Akshara Purusha. Akshara Purusha, in due course, when he realized it, that he is not limited to the body alone, like Shubha Brahmarshi's case. Some Sarvabhuta Hridayam Anima. When he comes to that stage, he is Purushottama. That's all. But Vastu is the same. He is going through three different phases. Sharapurusha, Asharapurusha and Purushottama. Isn't it? So, and it is after that, after saying this, that Krishna is coming to this 16th chapter, which is Devam, Asuram, Sambhati, Vivaga, Yogam. That is the name of this chapter. In the 9th chapter, Krishna spoke. What did he say? Mokhasha mokha karmano mokha jnana vijayasa rakshasi masurim cheva prakritim mohinim shuddha. If you remember that verse, what we have seen before. So there Krishna spoke about this, that when under the clutches of jiva, or when you are in that state as a jiva, that at that time all these things happen. What one? Mokhasha, mokha karmanam, mokha jnana vijayasa. At that time only this Rakshasi, Asuri exist. You see, Rakshasi and Asuri is also existing at that time. Rakshasi, Asuri in Jaiva. Why? Prakriti, Mohini, Shuddha. Prakriti, material nature is creating that illusion in us. Like anything else. Demonic nature and divine nature. You will understand this better when we go through some examples. How important this is. Because today, our normal way is putting, grouping people into two different things, isn't it? That is not how it works. That is not how this chapter is to be understood. Because if you do in that way, what the problem is, that you won't be able to explain how a divine person sometimes acts in a demonic way, or how a demonic person acts in a divine way, when you do this kind of classifications. You can only explain that in this particular way, how Krishna is going to talk about it here. Krishna is saying here that for our difficulty is this, that with this development of the drama and also the different television programs and all that, they will always present it to us, a demon in a particular way, isn't it? They will put a big black hair and the big teeth and some two horns and everything. And he said, as soon as, oh, he must be a demon, we will say, as soon as you see that. So this image builds up inside us. And we start thinking that all demons will be like that. Is it not? We think like that. All of demons are looking a little bit, terrifying look. They give it to you, isn't it? So you can see how they work, the drama and all other cinemas and all that. Everywhere, lot of these serials they have produced, Shivapuranam, Bhagavatam, Mahabharatam and all that. In all that you can look, whereas the rishis, they will present it, all of them with the ashes on the head and matted hair and wearing dhoti and big beard and everything like that. They will present like that. Narada Maharshi and Vishwamitra and all others. And Ramachandra and Krishna and all, they will present it in another way, in a little different way, isn't it? So once you kept on watching all these movies and films, everything, you form a general opinion inside, demon means like that, and godly means in like beautiful looking, good looking Ramachandra and good looking. Ramachandra and Krishna is always good looking. And then the problem comes when you look at Narasimhamurthy. Confusion comes there. Which nature would you put him into? Divine or demoniac? Or if you look into tortoise, Krishna's another incarnation, isn't it? Or if you look into the boar incarnation, which category will you put him into? So, based on the form, if you categorize people based on the body, there is a problem there, isn't it? Upanishads doesn't completely, Puranams also doesn't go along with that. So, this issue is here that we think like this, that he has a demon. We think that he is a demon, that's why he is like that, dressed up like that, isn't it? So, and it will create a feeling in their mind, and that these people are Rakshasas or Asuras. But what's interesting there is that some of these Rakshasas and Asuras, they are very, very good looking. Beautiful people, they are very beautiful people. And what to talk about anybody else, even Ravana. Ravana was a very good looking person. And Valmiki mentions this in the Ramayana about Ravana. About Ravana. He says, when Anjaneya, Hanuman went to see Ravana, he says there, Aho Tejaha. About Ravana he is saying this in the Sundarakandam. He says, about Ravana, when first time Hanuman saw him, he says, Aho Tejaha, Aho Pragalbhyaha, Sarva Lakshana Lakshidaha. He says, Aho Rakshasa Rajasya, Sarva Lakshana Lakshidaha. Rakshasa Rajan, the king of all these Rakshasas. He has got, when he looked at him, Hanuman felt so impressed by his beauty of Ravana, he says, that Hanuman is a very intelligent person. He has studied Shastram well. So he is saying all the symptoms of a great personality is there in the Ravana. He says, all symptoms of a great personality he could see in the Ravana. And then Hanuman is saying here, Aho Rakshasa Rajasya, O king of all these Rakshasas. You have to remember this Sundarakandam, that particular canto in the Ramayanam, is the most beautiful canto in the Ramayanam. And Hanuman was tied down by a rope, isn't it? And they brought him to, Indrajit went and got him, tied him down, and with the rope they brought him into the assembly of Ravana, Ravana's assembly. Ravana got the report that a monkey had come and done all these things. Ravana didn't know about Hanuman before, it looks like that. And he heard that he has come and destroyed the whole garden of Sri Lanka and all his buildings and palaces, everything. So Ravana says, Vanarobi iti shrutva naivaha. That people are telling me a monkey had come. I've heard, who is this monkey? He says, I've never heard about a monkey by name Hanuman before. He says, I've heard about Bali. Bali had heard, you know, because Bali had given him hard time before. So I've heard about a monkey called Bali. And many other monkeys I've heard about, but I never heard about a monkey by name Hanuman. He says, but I don't think he's a monkey then, if he has done all these kind of things in Lanka. Anyway, tie him down and bring him over here. He said to, gave the order to all the other Rakshasas, and Indrajit went and tied him down and brought him in. So Indrajit used the Brahmastram and brought him in. And when Hanuman entered into the palace, he said, the first person who got up was Ravana. He was sitting there, but when Hanuman walked in, brought him in, he got up from his seat. In a very natural way, an instinct from inside made him to get up. So, so this is Valmiki says this. Other Ramayana, this is a little different. But Ravana says to him, Kimesha Bhagavan Nandi, he says. He says to Kimesha Bhagavan Nandi Bhaved Sadi Hagada Yena Shaptosmi Kailase Maya Samchalide Pura Soyam Vanara Motehi Sya Kimsidhav Namahasura. He says here that when I moved Kailasam before in the past, the divine bull, Shiva's bull, Nandi, had come on the way and cursed me long, long ago. That has he come now here in this form, he started saying about seeing Hanuman. Or is that Bana? Bana is Mahabali's son. Remember in the story of Bhagavatam. Has he come in the form of this monkey? Ravana says, seeing this about Hanuman. He says like this. Has he come like this? So, Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. You know, that he was a devotee of Lord Shiva. And in spite of that, he got up from the seat and he says to him, is it Nandi who had come or Bana had come? So, Hanuman has seen Ravana, and while he was walking around, Hanuman was wandering around in looking for Sita Devi in Sri Lanka. At that time, Hanuman went to the inner chamber of Ravana's palace and he saw Ravana was sleeping there. So, when Hanuman saw him at that time, so as he said that, Ravana, about him, he was thinking in his mind, who Hanuman was thinking, that Ravana is a demon, isn't it, Asura? He could be one with a large teeth and big horns, like, you know, looking very ugly like that, like a way we all think about it. But when he saw him, he was so impressed by Ravana's beauty. He was saying that, Aho Tejaha, how beautiful he looks. And Aho Pragalbhyaha Sarva Lakshana Lakshidaha. All the symptoms of a great personality was present in him. And so, from this, what we have to understand is that this, when we say about someone demoniac, Asura or Rakshasa, it is not based on his body. That's the first thing. It's not based on the body. So, sometimes they are very capable people, these Rakshasas. They're very, and also, they have special talents as well. For example, Ravana was very well known for his musical talent. He was very good in music, particularly playing with the veena. Ravana was very expert at that. And Ravana wrote a famous prayers to Lord Shiva, which is still recited in the temples. Shiva Tandava Stotram, it is called. Glorifying Lord Shiva. Ravana has written. Everybody likes that. Now, it's a famous, it's a compilation, is so good. So, when you see that, you can see what kind of devotion Ravana had for Shiva, isn't it? But, somehow or the other, he went and did this wrong thing. Went and stole Sita Devi and brought her. And, but kept her Sita Devi like that, and finally got killed by Ramchandra. Killed by Ramchandra. That's all. And that's another aspect of Ravana's life. When you understand this in a proper way, you will see why this is important. That, so therefore, when you categorize people that Asura, Rakshasa, like that, you got to be a bit careful about it. For example, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu is extremely wicked person, as far as if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, isn't it? And if you look at there's a movie they have produced about Prahlada. Bhakta Prahlad. They made in Hindi first and then they made it in other languages also. So, when they selected a person for Hiranyakashipu's role, they didn't select someone who is in the mood of goodness. They found someone who can act in that way, in that mood of Rajogunam and Tamogunam, isn't it? So, in other words, someone who is very gross and very wicked in appearance, isn't it? But if you look at the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know what Bhagavatam says about Hiranyakashipu? He was always in the state of samadhi, thinking about going back to the spiritual world. Fully conscious that he had to leave this world and go back to Vaikuntham again, where he came from originally, isn't it? Therefore, Shukabrahmarshi says about him, Sambrambha, Sambhruda, Samadhi, Anubhadda Yogo. If you look, when you read the, in the seventh canto, you will mention this. Sambrambha, Sambhruda, Samadhi, Anubhadda Yogo mentions about Hiranyakashipu. A different kind of yoga system he was practicing. Not like the way Jnana Yogam, Karma Yogam, Bhakti Yogam. Sambrambha, Sambhruda, Samadhi, Anubhadda Yogo. In other words, that Sambrambha Yogam. Sambrambha Yoga means, when he had come to this world, he has got a special ticket. That is Sambrambha Yoga. That means, I will hate Krishna, but I will go back to Krishna. That is it. That's that ticket. Several kind, different kind of ticket. Sambrambha, Sambhruda, Samadhi, Anubhadda Yoga. That is how Shukabrahmarshi mentions that. This is the yoga system he has followed. Always in samadhi. Why? Always thinking about Krishna. I have to go back there. But I'll hate Krishna to such an extent that he will come and take me back there. To that confidence in him he had. Sambrambha, Sambhruda, Samadhi, Anubhadda Yoga. That is why he was able to hate Krishna so much while talking to Prahlada. To the extent that he was able to hate Krishna. In other words, he was in a much more samadhi state than any one of us. But we think that Hiranyakashipu is a demon and he has got, we got a completely different impression in our head, isn't it, about Hiranyakashipu. So, You should keep this understanding about Hiranyakashipu while studying this chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you will not get it, what Krishna is trying to tell us. What Krishna's point is this, that this demonic nature, divine nature, it's a nature at the end. It's a nature. And that nature has exhibited at the time when they were here. In reality, they are neither demon nor demon or asura or devikam. They are higher than all that thing. In their realized state, they are different. So if you look at that word, and you look at the world outside, many devotees also, I can tell you that, they also think about them in that way. You don't know their relationship with Krishna. What it is. That we don't know. We are thinking they are fighting here. But what happened? Why did they come here? When Kamsa came here, as uncle, as Krishna's uncle, Kamsa was selected when the milk ocean was churned. Who should come as Kamsa? So, that selection was made there, while churning the milk ocean. Krishna selected who all should come in this pastime of Krishna in this world. Kamsa had to play that role. He was selected for that. We were not selected for anything. That's the difference. We are just here like this, sitting here. So, who is closer to Krishna? And we are thinking that they are all useless or asuras and rakshasas. No, you cannot work like that. That is not how Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to present it to us. And we are thinking, oh, they are all useless. We are much better. We are chanting Hare Krishna, you know. We must be a lot better than they. Never chanted Hare Krishna. And they didn't follow the four regulative principles, so they must be really bad people. Whereas we look, we are how good we are. This general impression will come inside our mind. But never to think like that. They are a lot more closer to Krishna in many, many ways. They have that role. So here, just like we say, all the politicians also, we think like that. They're all very bad people, all the politicians, isn't it? And we are better because we're not paying in politics, at least. Think like that. So similarly, we think about a terrorist in the same way. Is it not? And we are good people, we are not terrorists at least. So, all these are relative things. All these are relative things. In Vyavaharam, all this is required. This is required in Vyavaharam. In Vyavaharam, you can't study this chapter bringing Vyavaharam into it. Vyavaharam is Vyavaharam. You have to know where to leave it also. While studying Bhagavad Gita, you can't bring and mix it with Vyavaharam. That is why in the fifth canto, our Brahmana said, Jadabharata said that, isn't it? What did they say? Don't mix tattvam with Vyavaharam. Tattvava marshena sahamanandi, he says there. Tattvam is tattvam. That only you, in the absolute platform, that is the truth. Vyavaharam is Maya's world. There, you can't bring and mix all that into it. And that's what we do. When we study about Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Kamsa, Jarasandha and all that, in their leela, they had a role to play. They came and they played and they're gone. If we bring that into our Vyavaharam and start making judgments on them, we will be wrong. We will go wrong. That is the most important thing. In Vyavaharam, you need all these things. You need all this, what we have today. For example, in Vyavaharam, policeman is a good person. And the thief is a bad person. Isn't it? In Vyavaharam, it is like that. But from the absolute platform, if you look at that, sometimes, even in the thief, you will find someone good. And in the same way, in the policeman, you may find something bad also. Is it not? Sometimes it happens that way. There are many people who were, in the eyes of the law or eyes of the world, they were bad people. But they have done such good things in life to the society. Whereas there were policemen who had put the hat on and the clothes on, but they didn't act in the right way. There are instances like that, isn't it? So, important thing to remember here is that this good and bad is something, not an absolute thing for anyone. There is no one who is totally good here. There is no one who is totally bad here either. Totally bad here either. Both are relative things. Good and bad is relative things. And that is what's called dvandvam. Mm. Dvandvam, duality, isn't it? So, they are the two sides of the prakriti, material's nature. Two sides of the material nature. So, and this you will find in everyone. This you will find in everyone. So, one who has transcended this both, this good and bad, and who is situated in the self, a realized soul, he is one category. And one who has not realized the soul, and who is very much situated in the material nature, is another category. So, Shastram divide people in these two different ways. One who is self-realized and one who has not realized. That's the only way Shastram will see. We should not bring Shastram into our way of thinking. Our thinking is like this, what? We think some people according to us are good people, is a devotee we say, other one is all demon. We have made it a classification like that, isn't it? Devotee and demon. Devotee be a bigger demon, but still we'll see is a devotee. See, devotee, demon and all can change any moment. So, based on devotee, demon, if you classify people, tomorrow your classification will all fail. It won't work. The only way you can classify people is this way. One who has realized the truth, one who has not realized the truth. There you can't go wrong. Because what you have realized is absolute truth. Not the temporary truth. Not the Vavaharika Satyam. Paramarthika Satyam. Vavaharika means the truth of this world. Knowing one who follows the principles of this world, he is not on the absolute platform. He is still under the clutches of the society, Maya, Prakriti, everything is there in him. So, that is the point Krishna is in this chapter you have to take note of. When we study this chapter, you must always keep this in mind. A self-realized person who has gone beyond the dualities of material nature, he is the rightly situated person. And a person who is comparing the good and bad of this world and moving according to that, he is also in the same category as anybody else in this world. That is the important principle of this chapter. Only otherwise, it will create conflict inside. If you go by the norms of this world, somebody calling comes over. Because sometimes it does happen, someone whom you have thought as devotee, he goes and does something totally abominable, completely against dharma. It happens. And then you are not able to explain that, why it happened. And somebody whom you called as a demon, he has gone and done something totally unbelievable thing for the benefit of others. And then you say that he was, how could he do this? He was such a demon, we say. But he went and done something. It's just like this. Yesterday's terrorist is tomorrow's freedom fighter. Isn't it? Always throughout the history you can see. Sometimes we were branded someone as terrorist. And the same people turn out to be freedom fighters. And later on they become the positions. Yeah, in the world they take the positions of leading the country and all others. Isn't it? So it's like a change in the dress. One time you call them when you are looking at them through the eyes of the society then. Then you are looking at the same people and you are looking through the same people with another different eyes of the society and you find that they are different. So similarly this devotee, demon, devi, asuri, all these things are temporary situations. Are temporary situations. That is the important point. And important thing is you cannot stay in one all the time. You will be in both of them. That is why I am saying, this Devam Asuram is in everyone to different degrees. Sometimes we are Devigam, sometimes we are Asurigam. That will not go away. You can't stay in one alone. That is the important thing. That is why, that is why this is in the Puranam. When you look at Puranams, you will understand this. If you study Puranam properly, you will notice this also. That Narayana is lying in the Vaikuntham, in the You can see like that Narayana is lying there. And from Narayana's ears, some earwax came out. And from that, two demons were born. Madhu and Kaidava. Those two demons were born from the wax that has come from Narayana's ears. Isn't it? So, that means Mahavishnu is considered to be in the Sattugunam. Is it not? What is Mahavishnu means? This Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva and all that, you have to know what it means. It means that the reflection of the Atma, Brahman, when it reflects in Sattugunam, that is Mahavishnu. When it reflects in Rajogunam, that is Brahma. When it reflects in Tamogunam, that is Shiva. Vastu is the same. They are not different. Same Vastu, just like when Brahman reflects in our Vasana, Chittam, then it is Jiva. Chittam, when it reflects, is Jiva. So, Vastu, Atma, which reflects in three modes. And when it reflects in Sattugunam, it is Vishnu. Reflects in Rajogunam, it is Brahma. When it reflects in Tamogunam, it is Shiva. So, when from Mahavishnu's earwax, even though it is Sattugunam pure, Mahavishnu is Sattugunam, isn't it? In Bhagavatam also you will see. Sattugunam reflection is, but even there, this Asuric tendency is there. In the Vandav acts Madhu and Kaitava. So, if it is like that from Mahavishnu, it can happen. We should not get surprised if any Asuric tendencies comes from us. We don't have to get surprised about that, isn't it? So, you cannot categorize anyone purely as demoniac. You can say some particular action was demoniac, but to put that person as a demon category is not possible. It's not possible. So, similarly, Madhu Kaidava, these two demons, they were formed from Vaikuntham, they came from his earwax, from the Mahavishnu's ears, isn't it? Similarly, who is Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu? They were the gatekeepers in Vaikuntham, were they not? They were gatekeepers there. So, they didn't come from the planet of Rakshasas. They came from Vaikuntham, they came, isn't it? So, otherwise they would have said that they have come from the Rakshasas planet. No, they said they came from Vaikuntham, isn't it? So, Rakshasam, this Daivigam Rakshasam, it's a world of its own. Where you enter, you come out. Rakshasa Logam, it is called. So these people, when we are talking about Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana and all that, they came from that world, from Rakshasa, not the physical world, from that Asuric Logam, Asura nature, they have come. And Krishna has come from Vaikuntham. Krishna has come from Vaikuntham. So, Asuras, all they come from the Asuric world. And they could have said like that, but they didn't say like that. Instead of saying like that normally we say, oh, he has come from the Gandharva's world, or we have come from the Patala Logam, we have come from Rakshasa's world. No, nowhere it is mentioned like that. Do you understand what I am saying? That in the Puranam, when they presented Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, if they were permanently demons, Rakshasas, it would have said that they have come from demonic world, from Rakshasa planet. Instead, they say, Puranam is saying to us that they come from Vaikuntham. Who? Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana. They have all come from Vaikuntham and Kailasam. They have come from. Why did the Puranam say like that? For this reason. That it's not a permanent stamp on them. That they were great personalities in the Vaikuntham. But due to some mistake that happened there with four Kumaras, due to whatever Krishna's plan was, it so happened that they had to come and take their birth here as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. But even though they were Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they were spiritually very, very strong personalities. Samyoga, Samrada, Samadhi, Anubaddha Yoga, says Shiva Brahmarshi about them. That even though they took that demoniac position in this world, from our point of view, Krishna rather preferred to deal with them than with us. Isn't it? Krishna thought that worthwhile having a fight with them. Enjoy fighting with Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Krishna says that I still have, when we can, after many, many manyandram, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu happened in the Swayambhu Manu's manyandram. After that, Chakshusha manyandram, Vaivastva manyandram, finally it comes to Tamasa manyandram, Gajendra story happened. And then in the next manyandram, when Mahabali story happened, Krishna says to Mahabali, how great your ancestors were. I still haven't forgotten when Hiranyaksha punched on my chest. He says to whom? To Mahabali. Krishna says, I've not forgotten that. In other words, Krishna has a feeling for them. That's why he never forgot about them. I still remember Mahabali. He says to Mahabali, your great ancestor, that Hiranyaksha, he punched me on my chest, he said. And I still haven't, the way I felt that day, Panchi says. So you can see here, so the important thing here that Indra, you know, got frightened after seeing Hiranyakashipu. You know why? Because Indra knew that he has come from Vaikuntha. He is a higher person than him. That is why he gave the seat to him and ran away from there. He knew very well. Otherwise Indra won't hand over easily like that. When Hiranyakashipu went to the heavenly planet, he decided to take control of the whole universe, isn't it? After control, performing penances, he got the strength to do that. So the first thing place he walked into was the heavenly planets. And when he got there, he kicked his throne. Jaguru Mahendra Sanamojasastidam Vishwavasastum Buru Asmadadaya. If you read Bhagavatam, you will see there. As soon as Hiranyakashipu walked in, he was so beautiful, good looking. Indra couldn't even match him in his beauty. He was so beautiful. Because of all these penances and everything, and when Lord Brahma brought the water in Kamandalu and sprinkled on his body, this body which was more or less like fully bones only, from there he got up. And when he got up, Vajra Samhanano Yuva, Bhagavatam says, he was like a youthful person whose body was made like diamond color. Like a diamond-like body. So beautiful he looked. And he walked straight away into the heavenly planets. And Indra, knowing very well who had come, he knew that this is the same person from the Vaikuntha planet, and therefore he gave the seat to him and got away from there. And not only that, Narada Maharshi says there, Narada Maharshi has two assistants, Vishwavasu and Tumburu. They started singing the glories of Narada Maharshi on the Veena. They started singing, glorifying our Hiranyakashipu's glories. They started singing that. And all the Apsaras women, they started dancing to please to please Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu was not attracted to any of that. He was so magnanimous even in that. Same thing happened to Mahabali also. When Mahabali, after he was offered this place in the heavenly planets, when he went there, when all the demigods lost their kingdom, and Mahabali was not attracted by any of the sense gratification in the heavenly planets. Is spoken about both Hiranyakashipu as well as Mahabali, their greatness. In other words, why is their greatness? Because they are not ordinary people. They are great personalities. For a role they had to play here, they played their role. That's all it is. Nothing more than that. So what is pointing it to us is, when you study Puranam, you must not form this kind of opinion in the mind that they are all baddies and we are the goodies. That means you are not nothing understood. You are not got anything. These are Sobhavam it is. Which one? This Asurika Sobhavam it is. Devika Sobhavam it is. That is what Krishna is calling this chapter as Devigam Asurika Sambat Vibhaga Yoga. That Sambatti. Sambatti is important. what you possess, that's all. But that's not your permanent nature.
So or we think like this, Devam Asuram, and we think that these are all good and that's all bad in that way. Isn't it? You can't say anything about it. You can't say anything about it. Because it, even today, if you look, you will see this. Even today, some of the biggest communist leaders, they do fantastic deity worship inside the house before they go to preach their politics outside. Even today, there's big politicians. Even in Bengal, you can see there were great devotees, but outside they will preach. There's no God exists. Then they were doing the deity worship at home. After all, 1 or 2 hours of puja and other things at home, they come out in the morning. But they won't, externally, they will have to play their role as politicians. Because that Marx and Lenin has said something to follow that, whatever that is being spoken. So, similarly, externally you will find the sannyasi still likes everything, devotees, but inside what goes on will be different also, the opposite way. So all these things are in this world. You can't do anything about it. That just because somebody has changed clothes or somebody has done something, that still that desire for sense gratification and bhogi. Bhogi means you can't for sense enjoyment, materialist, or all these things is not completely based on the dress alone. Dress alone. So what is the truth in all these things? Atmai Vedam Sarvam. Everybody is a soul. Everybody is a soul, Atma. That is the most important thing. And that is the fundamental principle. Only in their dress or in their manifestation, the difference is. The difference is. One person has taken the dress of a asura. Other person has taken dress of a devotee or a divine nature. Divine nature. In the Bhagavatam, you will see, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look into everybody will get one of these dresses. Devotee's dress or a demon's dress. Sometime. You will find this in the Chitragedu story. That poor Chitragedu, he had to become a big demon, isn't it? Vritrasura. He became Vritrasura. So that Jiva, remember Narada Maharshi invited that Jiva to come back. That Jiva says here, Sarva eva sarvesham sarvam bhavati. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see. The Jiva is answering this. You will get these different dresses. Sometimes as a devotee, sometimes as a demon. Sometimes as a demon. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there in the sixth canto. That is in the sixth canto. I think it is in the 16th chapter. Yeah. 16th chapter, Jiva Vaja. You see, Jiva has spoken, talking. Bandhu jnatiri madhyastam mitro udasina vidvisha sarva evahi sarvesham bhavandi kramasho midhaha. That is that verse. That is 6.16.5. Bandhu jnatiri madhyastam mitram udasina vidvishaha sarva evahi sarvesham bhavandi kramasho midhaha. How prakriti processes us, we don't know that, isn't it? We all have got good vasana, sadvasana, and impure vasana in us. So prakriti makes the decision which cloth dress to put on us. And when that dress is put on, a decision is made. These are the prarabdham that has to come through this body because of the vasana inside. Vasana we have created through our karma. So, lot of good vasanas are inside, lot of bad vasanas are also inside. So, in this life, what vasana should be exhausted through prarabdha vasana, that decision is made by prakriti. And she creates the dress in such a way and puts it on us and sends us here. That's all, we have no freedom there.
You see, you can see there, Vandu Jnatyajima Ari Madhyastha Mitra Udasina Vidyushaha. That all these different friend and relative, enemy and friend or Udasinan or not indifference, not attached to anything. Sarva eva hi sarvesham. You have to take up all these different roles. Bhavandi kramasho midha. In a order it happens to all of us. Bhavandi kramasho midha. This is the jiva answering that. Because this has opened our Chitragedu's eyes. Is it not? Because Chitragedu was very attached to his little child who died. And Angiras Maharshi and Srinatha Maharshi came there. And they understood that this person is not going to take listening to anything, spiritual instructions. The only option they had was to bring, call that jiva back. So jiva says to them, why are you calling me back? My business with you is finished, I am going. Karmabhara brahmyamanasya devatiriyam nriyonishu. In the words before that he says, kasmin janmanyami mahyam pidaro madharo abhavan. Karmavir Brahmyamanasya Devadiryangriyonishu. That I am going through this whole big cycle of I am somebody's son and at the same time I am somebody's father also. Is it not? There itself problem starts. Whom should be attached to the father or to the son? You are somebody's son, but you are somebody's father as well. And this cycle is constantly going through. So, my food is finished here with you. To Chitragedu, he says, the jiva says, my food, what I was supposed to take from you is over. I must go. Don't hold me back, he says to. At that time, Chitragedu understood that all this relationship has no meaning. He comes to understand that. And he goes away from there, isn't it? So, that is what it is mentioned here. That the... that... in this life, somebody will take birth as a father, and in the next life, he could come as the son. He could come as the son. Similarly, husband could become the wife, and wife could become the husband. All this is possible. All this is possible. Similarly, a demon can become a devotee, and a devotee can become a demon. Asura can become Deva, Deva can become Asura. All these are the role outside we have to play. Outside we have to play. Why is this specially spoken is that you can't develop this concept that some particular person is an asura or a demon, categorize him and create this dvesham inside, hate towards him. Because this divine nature, if you find in someone, don't think that he is special. That also important. As much as you don't categorize a person as a demon and stamp him as a demon and create dvesham towards him, equally, if you see someone who is divine in your eyes, you see somebody as divine, and you start developing a certain attachment to him in that particular way, that is also wrong. That's also because it's coming from ignorance, not knowing the truth. Truth is, there is no demon, there is no devotee. This is both false concept it is. And that is what leads into this disappointment when something goes wrong. Because of this. Because inside this demon, inside that devotee, both that Chaitanyam, the living force, is the same. You see? Same. And both of them are looking for liberation. The seed of liberation is in both, as well as the devotee, as well as the demon. And this, we should know this. We should know this. Only then, this Devasura Sambad Vibhaga Yogam, this chapter, Devasura Sambad Vibhagam Rakshasaha, and there is no Devam Asuram special category, Rakshasaha. So, see this word Rakshasa, you can see. Rakshasa, if you write it backwards, what does it happen? Sakshara, it becomes. Isn't it? Actually, all Rakshasas are Saksharas. You can see that. Sakshara means one who is very well educated. He is Sakshara. So, you can see when the word itself is that the well educated are the biggest demons. They create the greatest catastrophe in the world. Ordinary person, least educated, he doesn't do much damage in this world. He works physical work, or he does something very simple work, earns his living, gets his food, sleeps and leaves this world. But the ones with the brain, the havoc they have created in this world, because their brain is working, and the destruction they have created, all the problems, if you look in this world, who is behind it? This educated class. The so-called educated class. So that is why that saksharatvam creates this. That when you get more educated, you become more demoniac, isn't it? So saksharata is there, and on the other side you can see all the people who kill, who create, slaughter animals, and who run all the huge distilleries, alcohol creations and prostitution, everything, whatever you think of demoniac in this world, what goes on. Who is going to moon? Who is going to this Mars? Who is going and exploring underneath the water? All these people with these kind of brains, isn't it? So you can see this Rakshasa nature, more you have this literacy, this leads into that. So that is why, while defining this, I say here, Asurishu Indriyarteshu Ramande Asuraha. Anyone who enjoys the senses, he is the Asura. He is the Asuric nature. So if you continuously busy with sense enjoyment, everything is sense enjoyment, isn't it? This Mars business or Moon business, this is sense enjoyment it is. Nothing else is going to come from that. So, and who thinks that this is all the goal of life, this sense enjoyment in this way, and technology, development, continuously trying for economic development and making life difficult for others in that process. All this is, who live like that, they are the Asuras. They are the Asuras. So particularly their business is, without any reason, in a very subtle way, create trouble for others, give pain to others. You can see this happening, how the world is changing. If you observe carefully, you can see that everybody has a right to live in this world, is it not? Whoever has got a body. But they will create such system that they will make your own livelihood difficult by their actions. Throw people out of jobs for nothing. For if you are doing some job peacefully, no, you can't do it. They will find out some mechanism by which they say, oh, we have to save the money and put the man out of the job. All these kind of things is coming from that. Some machine will do it, or developing something else to do it, and in the creating difficulty for him. So you have to remember this. This is a very important point, because this whole industrialization is on this demonic thinking behind it. There is no question about that. It has created so much misery for so many people all over the world already, and it is still doing, and it will do more in the future. We can see that, how it's happening all over the world, isn't it? It makes life so difficult for people that to survive in any profession, you have to work hard, so hard, to be there, to survive in that position. And a ordinary person who is satisfied with simple living, some food to eat and a place to sleep, and had a satisfied life, and he cannot live in this world. That situation is developing more and more, is it not? That they make your life in such a way, the whole social fabric is created in such a way, that you are forced to either fall onto this side or you have to fall on the other side. And that develop tendency, this is Asurik. So you can see that coming from that, isn't it? All and consumerism, industrialization, it's all a product of this. But they will not agree with that. They will say they are doing good to the world. That is Maya. To think that they are doing a lot of good to this world, isn't it? So indirectly, constantly giving pain to others, this is that Asurik nature. When we read this chapter, you will look back into all of these things and you will see yourself that this modern world, what it glorifies here as great qualities, Krishna is not accepting any one of them as a great quality. Krishna is saying that they are the people who create the greatest havoc in this world. And when things go completely out of control, Krishna has to act. And that's why when it comes out in a big blow-up, happens at that time, isn't it? So what they do, this Asura says, all your principles of life, values of life, what you have very carefully nurtured, overnight they want to destroy everything. They don't want to give any importance to your values. They have their values. And they want to impose that on you. Even if you have that divine nature in you, they won't allow that to grow. They won't accept it first thing themselves. Not only that, if you have on your own tried to cultivate some divine qualities and develop that divine nature in you, they won't allow that to happen. This is all asuric. This is the asuric nature. Directly they won't come and do anything to you. But indirectly molding the society in such a way and making your life and everybody else's life difficult, except a few who is behind it. So, no, that includes scientists, businessmen, politicians. In all these categories, you will find this asuric nature. Who are? When that asuric nature is very powerful in any of them, the whole balance of the world gets changed. That's what's happening. When the politicians, without any principles, businessmen, without any morals, and the scientists, without any value for the truth, when they impose their own ideology into the society, society has to suffer. That's what's the result of all that. So, in our own education itself, this Asura is there. Asura is present in our own education itself. Rakshasa is there. And all our activities, what we are doing for our own livelihood in this world, activities and in our pride, ego, everywhere this Asura is there. Mm-hmm. This Asura is there. In a very nutshell, if you talk about that, all this Asura in Rakshasa, where is he inside us? In our false ego. In Ahankaram is the Rakshasa and Asura. Not in the self. Not in the self. It's in our Ahankaram, isn't it? Nowhere else he is there. It's in the Ahankaram. Because Devi Prakriti, divine nature, is Shanti. Divine nature is Shanti. This Ashanti, that means absence of that Shanti, always this flickering nature, and always feeling this lamentation, disturbance, and moving away from that center of that Shanti, that is Asura. You see that? Asuram is not a dress. That's the point I'm making. That the nature of divine person is Shanti, peace, always in peaceful state. If something is happening in a person, moving away from that peace, losing that Shanti inside and becomes disturbed all the time, Ashanti. And at the same time, always feeling constantly lamentation about something, hankering or lamentation, or disturbances, and moving away from that state of Shanti. If that's happening, that is Asuram. That is demonic nature. So, saying this, Krishna is taking us into that chapter. Taking us into this chapter. Devam Asura Sambandh Vibhaga Yoga. So we'll continue that in a few minutes.
चेदोदर्पणमध्ययनं वामहादावाग्निनिर्वापणं श्रेयक्रैरवचन्द्रिहाविवरणं ध्यावतु जीवनम् आनन्दाम्बुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपद पूर्णामृतास्वादनं सर्वात्मा सुमनं परं जयते श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नाम्नामकारि बहुधा सर्वशक्ति तत्रार्पिता स्मरणेन कालाम् एकादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममाभिः दुर्दैव वीदशमिहा जनिनानुरागाः तृणानविषयी जैनाम् परोरपि सहिष्णुना अमानिनामानदेनाम् कीर्तनीय सदा हरि न धनं न जनं न सुन्दरीं कविदां वा जगदीशकामये मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरे भवदात् भक्त्यहरि दुहित्वे अयि नन्दनयोजकिङ्करम् पतिताम्हं शमे भवाम्बुधौ कृपया तव पादभङ्गजस्य ददूमि सदृशं विचिन्तयाङ्गलदश्रुधारया वदनं गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलगैर्निचितं कदा भवो तव नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति
युगायिदं निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायितं शून्यायिदं जगत् सर्वं गोविन्दग्रहे नमे आश्लिष्य वा पादरदां विनष्टु माम् अदर्शनाम् अमहदां करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विदधा विलम्बडो मत्प्राणनाथास्तु नैव नापराः
सो देवम् असुरं सम्पत् विभागयोगम् That is the title. Devi Asuri Rakshasi Cha Iti Praninam Prakritayo Navame Adhyayaha Suchidaha. In the ninth chapter, this Devam Asuram Rakshasi, which we mentioned before in the ninth chapter, Mokasha Mokha Karmano, that verse. Mokha Jnana Vijayadasa Rakshasim Asurim Chaiva Prakritim Mohinim Shraddha. Krishna spoke about, gave a start of this, a kind of indication of this chapter there itself in the ninth chapter. Tasam visarena pradarshanaya abhayam sattu samshuddhi ityadi adhyaya arambhyade. That means, in order to explain that, what that asurim rakshasi form or the bhavam, bhavam it is, that it is not the person, it's the bhavam. What is asuri bhavam? What is asuri rakshasi bhavam? In order to explain that, Krishna is saying here, Vistarena Pradarshanaya. In order to expand on that, Krishna is starting this chapter with Abhaya Sattu Samshuddhi. That is how this verse begins, you will notice there. With Abhayam Sattu Samshuddhi, Ityadi Adhyaya Arabhyade. Like this, this chapter is starting. Tatra Samsara Mokshaya Devi Prakriti. The reason for saying this, Devi Prakriti is helpful for liberation. Samsara mokshaya. In order to free yourself from the material existence, Devi Prakriti is necessary. Asuri Prakriti won't help. That's the first thing. Nibandhanaya Asuri Rakshasi cha iti. For bondage, if you want to be in bondage, Asuri Prakriti or Rakshasi Prakriti will help. If you want to be for liberation, Devi Prakriti is necessary. That is the purpose of saying this, this chapter. ఇది దేవ్య ఆర్ద ఆదానాయ ప్రదర్శనం క్రియతే ఇతరయో పరివర్జనాయ చ శ్రీ భగవాన్ వాంచం సో దేర్ ఫోర్ వన్ షుడ్ ఎండెవర్ ఫోర్ దేవి ప్రకృతి అండ్ వన్ షుడ్ లెర్న్ హౌ టు కీప్ అవే ఫ్రమ్ ది అసురి ప్రకృతి ద రీజన్ ఇస్ దిస్ దట్ దేవి ప్రకృతి ఈజ్ కండ్యూసివ్ ఫార్ ఫ్రీయింగ్ యువర్ సెల్ఫ్ ఫ్రమ్ ది మెటీరియల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్ అసురి ప్రకృతి విల్ బైండ్ యూ మోర్ టు ది మెటీరియల్ నేచర్ And that is how this chapter begins. So, Devi Prakriti is a cause for liberation. Little by little it happens. Or slowly but steadily it releases us. Releases us from the bondage. Devi Prakriti. In other words, another way of saying Devi Prakriti is how to make yourself more simple. Simplifying things. That's called Devi Prakriti. When you learn how to simplify life, that is Devi Prakriti. You see? Not making it complicated. Making complicated is Asuri Prakriti. You see that point? That when you're making it simple, that crookedness inside, it is the crookedness inside that makes life very complicated. Isn't it? That you become very crooked, then your scheming starts inside, planning how to exploit the nature, how to exploit others. All this has come from the Asuri Prakriti. Asuri Prakriti. So with the improvement in the Devi Prakriti, when it improves us, then our demands comes down in life. Demands, naturally it will come down. That brings a shanti inside, peace. You can see naturally, when you are not endeavoring very hard in this world, struggling very hard, working very hard, expecting a lot of things from this world. If you completely give up everything, more and more peace, shanti starts developing inside. Anandam and mutually respect for others, paraspara priyam, all these things comes from Devi Prakriti. It's all a nature of the Devi Prakriti. On the other hand, bondage, always in bondage and always feeling disturbed, all this is a product of the Asuri Prakriti inside us. And that means which gets us completely stuck in this world, in material existence, samsara. That is Asuri Prakriti. So, so Asuri Prakriti is like this, holding on to our shikha and pulling us out from here. So, Devi Sambad Vimochaya Nibandaya Asuri Mata. Krishna mentions that, isn't it? Devi Sambad Vimochaya Nibandaya Asuri Mata. Krishna mentioned that in the previous chapter. So, in there, Devi Prakriti, if person who has got Devi Prakriti, how does he know whether he has Devi Prakriti or not? He can see himself just like he can see himself in a mirror. It's so simple. He can see himself what he is like he sees in a mirror. To that extent, he is simple inside. He is simple inside. So, just like sometimes people, what they do, they print out from the internet the symptoms of different illnesses. And they keep it. They keep looking at it somehow. After about 50, it starts, normally. When you get some different illnesses, and some people were very specialists in that. They know more than the doctor. Even the doctor will get confused, but they know it. They know such finer details. They know about the different diseases. And they can tell you also. And they'll say, if you're getting hungry now and then, quite often, they say, oh, you know what it is. Diabetes is on its way. And probably man has not eaten. He was saying he has got diabetes also. You're telling. And so as soon as you start getting hungry a little bit, probably you didn't have a proper meal. You've got something from here and there, you know, one sandwich here and one sandwich there, like how people eat. So, obviously, naturally, he's not satisfied. So, he starts feeling hungry again and again. He says, oh, no, you should check it out with the doctor. They say to him. He goes to the doctor, and sometimes the doctor says, yes, you've got diabetes. And sometimes he says, yes, you haven't got the diabetes. He says like that. So, a lot depends on the doctor's mood also, how much he understands about it, isn't it? So, here, the thing is, he says, the more interesting than this diabetes is this blood pressure thing. Sometimes when you go, he says it's perfect. And then when you go to watch for general and tell him, he says, oh, you got to hide the blood pressure, they say to you. So only in Radland he said you don't have any blood pressure. Get there. He says you got high blood pressure. Because through all the tension and stress you have driven all the way to Watford. You got there, suddenly your blood pressure has gone up. And he says that keep pressing, he says that. Oh, it's very high, he says. And he gives you the prescription, whereas this doctor says, you're okay. So, this is all there, and these patients who are going there, they are also very interesting people. The patients who go after all these things. They want somebody to tell them that they've got it. Otherwise, they also won't get sleep. Because they say, if you haven't, they have not said, then you are in a limbo. You're going home again, thinking that when you go home, then somebody is asking, what happened to the doctor? He says, oh, I don't know what the doctor is not saying. Well, it's better to have a second opinion. Then go somewhere else you run after that, isn't it? So, so the same way, when we go to the spiritual master also, the same way, we go to the spiritual master also, you're going to him because you want him to tell you that you are perfect. Similarly, just like when we go to the hospital, we say that we have got the disease. We want them to tell us, isn't it? So, if they say that you got the disease, then you are happy. Then you think that they have got the solution. They will do whatever that has to be done. Similarly, this Devi Prakriti, the divine nature, keep looking at yourself and see if you have got it or not. You got it or not. And that is what Krishna is going to explain here in that way. Arjuna is asking the question first time, what is this Devi Prakriti? What is this Asuri Prakriti? What is divine nature? What is the demoniac nature? That is how in this chapter. So, And because the symptoms of this, Devi Prakriti and Asuri, divine nature and demonic nature, is an internal thing, is it not? Like bhakti, it's an internal thing. Similarly, this nature also is an internal thing. So Arjuna is asking, please tell me the symptoms of this Devi Prakriti and the Asuri Prakriti. Normally, everybody in this world, even a thief also, says that world should say that you are a good person. We are good. That's what we want, isn't it? And or we consider like that we are all good people. That is how it is. So, so that is why we are able to find fault with others very easily. We are such good people, isn't it? So, first of all, I decide myself that I am perfect. And it is after that we make judgment about others. If you look yourself, you will see we all do the same thing. We consider ourselves perfect and then we make the judgment on everybody else, isn't it? So, that is why in the Bhagavatam, if you remember, Krishna says to this to Uddhava in that 28th chapter, Parasubhava karmani ye prashamsadi ye nindadi. So, ashu brashade swartham swartham abhiniveshada. Then, Krishna says, na prashamsadi na nindadi. Vishwam ekalpagam pashyen prakritya purushena cha. Krishna is saying to us that, first of all, never criticize or never glorify anyone. There is no need for that because Vishwamekalpakam pashyan, there is only Atma here. There is nothing else. Everything else is in relationship with the Subhavam. So, never do that. Vishwamekalpakam pashyan. And that Ekalpakam Vishwam, which is Atma, Prakritya Purushanaja. Prakriti and Purusha, we are Vyavaharam. In Vyavaharam, we are considered as Prakriti and Purusha. That's all. But that does not mean that we have any right to criticize or glorify anything, because there's only one thing here, Atma, nothing else. After saying that, Krishna said in the next words, Parasubhava karmani ya prashamsadi ya nindadi. One who is doing that, if he does that, so ashu brashyade, he will fall, he cannot stay anymore in the spiritual platform. So ashu brashyade swarthal asatyam abhiniveshada. Because he is swarthada, and he has already identified with the body and the mind, he is fallen already. Krishna is concerned, he is fallen. Asatyam abhiniveshada. His falsity, his abhinivesham. Abhinivesham means that kind of attachment to that. Is the cause behind that. So never to glorify anyone, never to criticize anyone. This is, Krishna is saying there, Vishwamekalpakam pashyan prakritya purushena cha. So, in order to see the Vishwam, the creation, as Atma, that is what Krishna is expecting from us. So, there, even this difference as Prakriti and Purusha must go. Even that difference has to go. And see everything as that Purna Vastu, which is Atma, Brahma, which is Brahma. But, without our knowledge, it comes up inside us. Which one? These things. Stuti, glorification, ninda, criticism, ragam, dvesham. All these things come from inside. So, the cause behind this raga dvesham. Krishna spoke the standard, what is expected for a person who is in spiritual life. That's what it is in that chapter, the first two verses. But without our knowledge, raga dvesham comes from inside. And similarly, also Stuti Ninda, which is coming from Ragadvesham. Ragadvesham is the behind it. That's why you are glorifying someone, you are criticizing someone. It's coming from that Ragadvesham. So, this cause behind this Ragadvesham is this divine and demonic nature. Devi Sambhata, Asuri Sambhata. This is the reason behind it. So, all this is spoken in these words, in order for us ourselves to understand us. It is for that purpose this verse chapter is spoken. purely for our own judgment about ourselves, to look into ourselves and to see what is inside us, how much is inside us. So, first thing Krishna is going to talk about Devi Sambandha. That is the first thing Krishna, because that's what we need, not the Asuri Sambandha, isn't it? So, so if you read this divine nature, what Krishna has spoken here, and if you have taken that seriously, you don't even have to read the remaining Asuri Sambandha. Because Asuri Sambandha is not going to be much helpful. Because if you read the Asuri Sambandha, the problem is, you will just start judging others. You will start seeing that in others. And you start thinking that, oh, see, everything as per Bhagavad Gita, he's got it. This is how it is. People are like that, isn't it? You'll read Bhagavad Gita and you'll start saying, you've got everything. It matches with the verses in the Bhagavad Gita. But we won't look into the other side, the good side, what has been spoken. Oh, we'll talk about our neighbor. You see, he's a demon anyway. Everything is there. So, I knew that before, you'll say. So, therefore, Devi Sambandha is what we have to get. Asuri Sambandha, we don't need it. So, in Upasana, that is what Upasana for. Sadhana, Upasana, is for this purpose. That this is something what you have to put effort and get it. That's how Devi Sambandha will come. Through Upasana, you have to develop it. Upasana, Karma, the difference is, Upasana, Upasana is a karma, isn't it? Upasana is a karma. See, for example, you are chanting the holy name, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and deity worship. That's all Upasana. That's all Upasana. Sadhana or Upasana, whichever way you address that. So, through karma, Upasana is done. It's through karma it happens, isn't it? That means endeavor is necessary. Effort is necessary. And through which you have to acquire it. But jnanam is not, you can't acquire it through karma. That's the difference. Jnanam, therefore they call it as bodhalmagam. It is becoming aware of that. That is jnanam, isn't it? Jnanam is not you acquire something by studying and no, jnanam is awareness, becoming that. That is bodhalmagam. Bodham it is. Whereas this Devi Sambandha or divine nature is not for bodhalmagam. It is through upasana, it has to be acquired through upasana or sadhana, or through the various processes that has been spoken. For example, Tattvamasi. When you say Tattvamasi, if you read in the Upanishad, you don't have to do anything after that. It becomes your identity, Tattvamasi. That what Upanishad is telling us, Tattvamasi, you are that Tattvam. That Brahman is that you are. Similarly, Aham Brahmasmi. If somebody says to Aham Brahmasmi, or if you read in the Upanishad, Aham Brahmasmi, you don't have to do anything after that. You are Aham Brahmasmi. That's what it is. It's both Atmanam it is. It's not through karmam you can't get it. Aham Brahmasmi awareness. You won't get it. That realization won't come through karmam or upasana. Suppose I am doing a lot of chanting, a lot of thinking that I'll become Aham Brahmasmi one day. It won't become. Aham Brahmasmi is awareness, acceptance it is. Isn't it? But that is why it's called bodhalmagam. That means if you are very, very pure inside, all that quality, what is required for acquiring the knowledge, if that is inside, which is called as sadhana chatushtayam. That means nityanitya vastu vivekam, ihamutra bhalavu bhogaviragam, shamadamadishal sambatti, mumukshatvam. If a person has got all these things, to him, if you present aham brahmasmi, it will work. A person who doesn't have any of these things, if he hears Aham Brahmasmi, it will be like anything else in this world. You heard some other two sounds, letters you heard, that's all it is. So there it is bodhalmagam, it is not karmalmagam. Here in this Devasura Sambhata is karmalpaka meditation. That means through upasana, through sadhana, it has to happen. So, anything that comes through upasana, you have to achieve it. You have to acquire it. You see, achievable or attainable it is. Achievable or attainable. That is why Krishna is explaining this Devi Sambhata in a particular way. Therefore, these three chapters now from onwards, now 16, 17 and the 18th chapter, they are called Khilam. In the Upanishads, they call it as Khilam. Khilam means you have to combine them three, all the three to be combined together. Because 15th chapter, actually Gita Shastram is over. If you look into 16, 17, 18, there is no Shastram in that very much. There's not much Shastram. Shastram finishes in the 15th, chapter. So, that is why, in that 15th chapter when Krishna finished, he gave a very deliberate ending for that chapter. Remember that last verse, if you look into the last verse, Krishna is saying there, Idi Guhyatamam Shastram. Idam uktam mayanakha edad budhva buddhiman syal kratakrityascha bharada. The verse itself is a very good indication that business is over, finished. An ending there for that chapter. That is the way that chapter ends, isn't it? So Krishna is saying there that 15th chapter, I have taught you a shastra, Krishna says there. And if you are intelligent, if you have become intelligent, then kratakartyata will come, means you will get liberated. You will get liberated, or jivanmukta state will come. And saying that, a 16th chapter, in order to explain that a little bit more detail, that so far you have heard the shastram, but while hearing the shastram, if there is any discrepancies in there, in your hearing, if something is not totally clicked in your understanding, to clarify that, these three next chapters, 16, 17, 18, is spoken. And finally, what Krishna does is in the 18th chapter, he comprises everything, summarizes in one chapter, and again presents it to us in the 18th chapter. So, practically you can see, if you look into the 18th chapter, you can know everything what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. It's there in the 18th chapter. Yes. Yeah, conclusion or something. Yeah. Perfection of renunciation, Prabhupada gave the title. And the actual conclusion is Moksha Sanyasa Yogam. That is the Sanskrit terminology for that chapter. Moksham Sanyasam. That means Sanyasam is not different from Moksham. So, that brings a question, isn't it? That is Krishna's standard. Krishna's standard is, if you are a real sannyasi, you already are liberated. Only then you are a sannyasi. Otherwise not. That's what I'm saying, that don't get carried away by the dress, institution and all other things. They are just a external manifestation in the world, you can say. And that will again change. It won't stay like the way it is. It will also change over years. You can see how it has changed in so many places. It always changes. But we should be intelligent enough to see through these things. And that is spiritual intelligence. To understand what is sannyasa means. What is Bhagavad Gita is talking about. Similarly, many things what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavatam also about sannyasam. We have to keep all that in the perspective while making that judgment about sannyasam. Otherwise you will end up in some false quarters somewhere. You will get lost in that process. So, in the 16th chapter is the first chapter in this Khilam. Khilam means this three chapters, 16, 17 and 18, which has been spoken only to correct ourselves in our understanding if anything has gone wrong in the previous chapter. Because 15th chapter, it is easier for us to see it on an intellectual level and leave it behind, and then not knowing that various other things are attached to it. So, so it is in that way Krishna is beginning this chapter. Let us start the chapter. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhe.
Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhe.
Jnana Yoga Vyavastiti.
Jnana Yoga Vyavastiti.
Danam Damascha Yajnascha.
Danam Damascha Yajnascha.
Swadhyayastava Arjavam.
Swadhyayastava Arjavam.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Abhayas Sattva Samshuddhe.
Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhe.
Jnana Yoga Vyavastiti.
Jnana Yoga Vyavastiti.
Danam Damascha Yajnascha.
Danam Damascha Yajnascha.
Swadhyayastava Arjavam.
Swadhyayastava Arjavam.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Krishna is saying, Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi Jnana Yoga Vyavastiti. Danam Damascha Yajnascha Swadhyayam Tapasya Arjavam. Abhayam, Abhayam Andhakarana Shuddhi. Sattva Samshuddhi means Andhakarana Shuddhi. That means purification of one's own subtle body, existence. Then, Jnana Yoga Vivastiti, fixed in the process of Jnana Yoga, in acquiring the knowledge of the self. Jnana Yoga Vivastiti. Danam, charity. Dhamam, control of the mind and senses. Yajnam, performing sacrifices. Swadhyayam, Vedapatam, studying the Shastram. Tapasya, austerities and penances. Arjavam, simplicity or truthfulness or straightforwardness. All these things. Abhayam Abhiruda, Sattva Samshuddhi, Sattvasya Andhakaranasya Samshuddhi, Sam Vyavahareshu Paravanchana Maya Anurnadi Parivarjanam Shuddha Bhavena Vyavahara Ityartaha. This is how Acharya Swami Bhashi says here. Abhayam is fearlessness. We will go each one of the separately so that you will know that fearlessness is not what we are talking about. Our fearlessness, suppose some people say I am fearless. What that doesn't mean anything. This fearlessness is a different thing. We will come to that later. Then what else is there? He says here, Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi. Then he says here, Swadhyayasava Arjavam. So, while dealing with others, no duplicity, straightforwardness, cheating, and lying, and maya, all those things not influencing your dealings with the world. That is Sattva Samshuddhi. Sattva Samshuddhi means that. Sattva Samshuddhi means that. It's a difficult thing, isn't it? Prabhupada mentioned about this in few occasions. He said like this. He said that full of politics. He said, full of diplomacy, full of lying, and full of cheating. He said to all of us, "This is all what you are." He said. And you can see that this is very ingrained in people. And with all that, what happens? Is there any wonder? With this mentality. He said these four things. Politics, diplomacy, lying and cheating. With this, we have come to spiritual life. And we deal with each other in the same way. And the after effect, we have suffered from that heavily. We all have paid a heavy price for that. And it still continues and you are not able to do anything about it. That's how bad it is. When politics and diplomacy and lying and cheating is there through and through in everything, in your dealings with the world and mutually also between each other, what kind of spiritual life can be there? It's not possible, anything. So all things have completely gone out of track and it is very difficult to put it back into the track. So So he said this, and it is in the letter to many people. So many problems came, and he was repeatedly saying this, that this is the whole problem, he said. Problem is not in the world, he said. Problem is within you. He said, so that is what he's saying here, that without these things, which on politics, diplomacy, cheating and lying, able to deal with others without disturbing them and straightforwardness. And that is what Krishna is expecting, the first thing from us. Jnana yoga vivasthiti, jnanam shastrata acharyadaha cha almadi padarthanam avagamaha. Avagadanam indriyadi upasamharena egagradaya swatma samvedyopadanam yogaha tayoha jnana yogayoho vivasthiti. Vyavasthanam tan nishtada esha pradhana devi sattvigi sambat. So, this jnana yoga vivasthiti, Krishna uses the word there, isn't it? Jnana yoga vivasthiti. Jnana means, from studying shastram, the knowledge what you acquire, from studying the shastram and from the knowledge from the acquired from the spiritual master, from the teacher, the spiritual master. That is what is Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti. That has affected you in your spiritual life. What you got from the Shastram and what you got from the spiritual master. So with that knowledge, able to control the mind and the senses. Able to control the mind and the senses. And able to realize the presence of Atma inside in that way. That is called Yoga. See that word, chapter, if you look, you'll see there. Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti, Krishna is saying there. So, what does Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti mean? Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti means this. The expansion of that is like this. That Jnanam, what you have got from the Shastram and from the Acharya or the Guru, and through that, able to apply that into one's own life, that knowledge, and with the result of that, you got your control of your mind and the senses. And that single-minded devotion in realization of the self and able to approach the soul, Atma inside in that way, that is called Yoga, Jnana Yoga. It is called Jnana Yoga. So, in other words, with knowledge, able to sustain in the yoga state, able to stay in the yoga state. And that is what Krishna calls it as Devi or Devi Sambhata or Satyuga Sambhata. Only through Devi Sambhat this will happen. Krishna says here, Yatra cha tesham yasham adhikritanam ya prakritihi sambhavadi satyugi sa uchyate. Acharya Swami mentions here that a person who has got this system set up inside, abhaya sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vivasthiti, that person, he says, such a person is satyugi, he is in the sattvagunam. Is in the Sattuvanam. Dhanam yadha shakti samvibhaga annadinam. Dhanam means according to one's own capacity offering things to others, including mainly the food. Annam. Annam is given priority over everything. That dhanam yadha shakti samvibhaga annadinam. Annadinam means starting with annam, food. From then onwards, other things as well. Damam cha bahya karananam upashamaha antakaranasya upashamam shandim vakshati. Damam means the external senses controlling them. That means ears, eyes, and all nose and all other senses. Keeping them under your control. Keeping them under your control. And similarly, our desires that's popping up inside, in different forms what comes out, controlling them is called Shandi. So, here, Dhanam Damascha Yajnascha Swadhyayastava Arjavam. Krishna is saying there, isn't it? Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti Dhanam Damascha Yajnascha Swadhyayam Tapasya Arjavam. Now, let us look. Yajnascha Shraudaha Agnihotradihi Smartaha Cha Deva Yadihi. That is how it is. That means big Vedic sacrifices like Agnihotram, Agnishtam, all other sacrifices, all of them, that is the yajnam. And then there is yajnam mentioned in the smriti, what one should, like vivaha yajnam. This is a smriti. It is not from the Vedam. It is from the shruti. It's not coming from the shruti, it comes from the smriti. Like for example, these kind of things, namakaranam, annaprashanam, chaulam, upanayanam, these are all from the smriti it comes. So following both yajnam and the what means is shraudha yajnam and smartha yajnam, both. Following all of them. Then swadhyaya hrigveda adhyayanam adrishtartham. So adhyayanam, studying of the Vedam, that means when you study the Vedam, Upanishads we are talking about, the goal is unknown to us, isn't it? That means you are studying about something about which you don't know. Normally when we study about something, we know the goal, is it not? Like for example, I want to go to the moon. I know the goal. Goal is moon. And I can see the moon from here. But I want to get there. But in Vedam, particularly Rigvedam, it's talking about mainly Rigvedam. In Rigvedam, the goal is unknown to us. But we have to study that. Still, Rigvedam, you have to master that. So, studying that, it is called Adrishtartham, Swadhyayam. Swadhyayam means studying that Vedic literature without knowing the goal. You are studying all the Vedic literature without knowing the goal, isn't it? You don't know the goal yet. We still don't know what is going to end up with. Tapaha vakshyamanam shariradi and arjavam hrijitvam sarvada kimcha. So, tapaha vakshyamanam shariradi. Krishna says here that swadhyayam tapasya arjavam, isn't it? So, tapasya is this, that later on it will come, the austerities of the body. Austerities of the body. For example, tolerate all the inconveniences of this world, bodily discomfort, hunger, thirst, all that, able to tolerate that. That is tapasya. That is tapasya. Tolerate the need, desire, the urges of the body. Hankering, lamentation, hunger, thirst, all that. That is a tapasya. So tapasya is mentioned here. Then finally, arjavam. Arjavam means hrijitvam. Hrijitvam means straightforwardness. Straightforwardness. That means behaving with others in a straightforward way, not in a diplomatic way. Normally we have been told that you have to be diplomatic, isn't it? It is the greatest problem in spiritual life, this diplomacy. It will destroy us because one side you will try to be diplomatic and the other side you want to become spiritually advanced as well, which will not work together. They are two opposing elements. Diplomacy politics and diplomacy. Prabhupada saying politics, diplomacy, lying and cheating, he said, four things. With those four behind, that means crooked mind, not a straightforward mind, working, operating like that. That's not conducive for spiritual life. This is the principle. This is the principle. So Krishna begins this chapter with that verse. Abhaya sattva samshuddhi jnana yoga vivasthiti dhanam dhanascha yajnascha swadhyaya stapa arjava. What we'll do is from tomorrow, each of these one we will look at it, detail, what they mean, abhayam means. And abhayam is not just translation, of course, it's fearlessness, I think, it's translated. It is fearlessness, but what kind of fearlessness? Fearlessness is in different ways. For example, you can see one who has got very strong physically strong. He will be very little bit fearless. Or he's got a gun with him. He's also fearless, isn't he? Because I got a gun with me. That is not the fearlessness what Krishna is talking about. This fearlessness is completely different. That is why, from a spiritual point of view, what does it all mean? And all these qualities, what Krishna has spoken, their growth is important. But before we talking about their growth in us, we have to know what they actually mean, isn't it? Only then you can go behind it. So otherwise, everything can go wrong. And sattva samshuddhi, for example, oh, I'm very pure, because I'm very clean inside, everything is very clean. I feel start thinking, but that's not what Krishna is talking about. Sattva samshuddhi. So we'll look at that from tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.